Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to call this January 14th, 2016 meeting of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority to order. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Chairman Nellie.
Here.
Mayor Silverberg.
Here.
Chairman Bulova.
Here.
Chair Randall.
Here.
Board Member Fassett.
Here.
Mayor Parrish.
Here.
Mayor Silverthorne.
Here.
Council Member Oliver.
Here.
Council Member Rochelle.
Here.
Senator Evan. Delegate Hugo. Delegate Minshew.
They're busy.
Mr. Garzinski.
Here.
Ms. Bushu.
Here.
Mayor Foreman.
Here.
Ms. Cuervo.
Here.
Mr. Horsley.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Actually, other than our General Assembly members, we have a full table tonight. That's good. And we didn't expect that. So. Although it's actually kind of creepy the way this looks. Like Gary and Sandy like sitting off in the corner. First of all, let me just say it's good to have everyone here tonight. I hope everyone's having a happy new year. Do want to welcome some new members we have with us tonight. We have the new mayor of the city of Alexandria, Alice Lumberberg, and the new chairman of the Loudoun Board of County Supervisors, Phyllis Randall.
Thank you.
And someone who's probably not a new face to most of us here, but new to this table, is Jay Fassett from Arlington County. Welcome.
And
Karen Oliver with us as an alternate tonight. So welcome. Thank you all for being here this evening. We have the first item of the requires action tonight is the minutes of the December 10 meeting.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to move approval of the minutes.
Hold on, I got.
Public comment period.
You'll be dealt with after those minutes. You wrote it down in a certain order. Okay, we have a motion from Mrs. Bulova, a second from Mr. Parrish. Any discussion on this? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Abstain.
Okay, this is actually tricky, because we've had some changes, and we had a lot of absences last month. Who was here last month? 1, 2, 3. Okay. I believe Ms. Rischel, tell me if anyone that object to this if they need to. Ms. Rischel, Mrs. Bulova, myself, and Mr. Parrish voting aye, everyone else abstaining. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So there can be stuff we did last month, and we can say it differently tonight. You must be excellent. That's rude. This is our annual organizational meeting. So at this evening's meeting, we will be having our citizens' time. We have three speakers signed up. I'm not sure if they're all here. I know I saw one of them, but we will, let's do this. So under citizens have, each speaker will be given 3 minutes to speak. Do we have the light thing set up? Over here? Fantastic. A warning light will come on when the speaker has 30 seconds left. A red light will come on when 3 minutes are up. Very familiar probably to most of us. Is Mrs. Smith here this evening? I know I saw her. Come on up. While she's coming up, is Mr. Purvis here? Have some Mr. Purvis and Mr. Whitfield here. Another one? Nancy, you may have the stage to yourself tonight.
So thank you, and good evening, and happy new year to you all. Nice to see some new faces and familiar faces. I'm Nancy Smith with the Northern Virginia Transportation Alliance, which is a private sector nonprofit business and citizen organization that advocates for better transportation solutions. I'm also here tonight on behalf of the Northern Virginia Business Transportation Coalition, which is a coalition of all the major business organizations, chambers of commerce, and industry groups throughout the region, many of whom are currently in Richmond, which is why I obviously designated appointment for this evening. The Northern Virginia Transportation Coalition worked for over a decade to secure new state and regional transportation funding. And this group was critical in the passage of House Bill 3202 and then again in the passage of House Bill 2313. Now the coalition's top priority is to ensure that those new and existing transportation dollars are wisely invested. The coalition is concerned, however, that for a region as such as ours that has the worst traffic in the nation and an economy that is more dependent on daily interjurisdictional and interstate travel than any other major metropolitan area in the nation, our region lacks truly regional transportation priorities that are based on investments that are likely to do the most to reduce congestion and improve travel times. Towards that end, the coalition has endorsed the policy statement that was just passed around to you, signed by 20 major business organizations, that urges you and to think of transportation investments based on a set of criteria and identifies 9 projects that we believe represent the investments of greatest regional benefit to Northern Virginia. The resolution does not say that these are the only investments that we need, but that these are the ones that the coalition believes have the greatest value and should be the standard by which our region measures transportation progress in the next decade and beyond. The coalition would like to stress that our transportation investments need to be regional in nature. As you all know, driving around, our transportation needs are not proportional by jurisdiction. And we feel that investments should be made on the basis of performance-based criteria, not on political boundaries. The goal here from the resolution was to initiate and promote a discussion amongst political officials and the business community to build consensus around a framework of ideas to move forward on the focus of truly fixing our regional framework. And we look forward to working with you to achieve that goal. Before my time ends up, I want to say, too, a quick note about something that your body passed before the end of the year in the project rating criteria. We do appreciate your decision to increase the congestion reduction value to 45%. We feel that's a big step in the right direction for helping to achieve these goals, and we look forward to continuing to monitor that progress. Thank you.
Chairman, members of NVTA, I wish you best wishes for 2016. Thank you all for your service. And I'm trying to really look at what the progress has been made since this time last year. I know you progressed on your proposed projects. I guess we'll hear the ratings on these next week, if my understanding is correct. Under the HB2.
HB2 ratings. That's not NVTA ratings.
Sorry. Is that the H? I'm still confused with HB599. I talked to Lemonian last week. But my understanding is HB599 may have broader implications within Northern Virginia. But I still need to understand what the difference is and what applies where. So that's my understanding, Colin, but I'm sure I'm not the only one. Of greatest concern is that over the last year, WMATA has continued to experience declines in operating results. And obviously, I note that Mr. Wiedenfeld is here, and hopefully we'll hear something from him tonight. But I went to the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission meeting last week, and whereas he was there, nobody present discussed the ever-increasing problem in which WMATA's expenses are growing at 6% a year, while they're only projecting revenues to grow at 1% a year. And so I said to the CTB that met in Alexandria last month, a special study committee is needed that's going to be comprised of federal, state, and local officials, because we have to look at how to put the financial situation. Yes, of course, safety and reliability are also important. But the financial performance of WMATA, something has to be done, and we need the best experts in the country. And I don't know, I suggested this to the CTB. I don't know what action will be taken. But, I mean, I can promise you I want WMATA to succeed as much as anybody. But we are at a point we can no longer move forward with some of the capital plans until such time as we have a sound financial footing. And so that really is also a problem. I was here last month and noted that your plan is to spend as much as $400 million for the Route 2866 interchange, and Delegate Michu commented that that's a federal interstate, and he was uncertain as to why we should be committing to spend so much of our money, and I don't understand that too. So I will be here as many of the meetings as I can make this year. And I will look forward to discussing the ratings when they come forward next week from VDOT. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Whitfield. Checking in, Mr. Purvis is here? No?
No.
Okay. Excellent. Thanks, sir. All right. With that, we will close citizens' time and move on to our presentations. Ms. Backman, 2015 annual report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a part of the job that I like. So,
And staff is in the process of. The best part.
Mark, I wouldn't have any pictures of Marty out in this
I'm sure there's only one. It's going to be a very good one.
She's smart.
The 2015 annual report, this was done in collaboration. The jurisdictional staff and agency staff, again, as you know, the authority's enabling legislation requires that we do an annual report to show how the funds that we receive have been expended. Last year was the first round of annual reports that we've ever done. This year, I want to note, and I'm not going to go through everything, this is a flip book that will be posted on the website, so you can have an electronic copy in addition to the hard copy. But, of course, we have the infamous authority photo.
Let me explain the infamy of this. Come back. That's like seven different photographs pasted in there.
Yes,
real?
It is.
A major big time of
John did excellent work in capturing everyone, making you appear to be in the same room at the same. We also have a lot more of the photos regarding projects that we're funding or projects that we are evaluating. So we have more pictures, less people pictures, Mr. Garzinski, but more photos of some of the projects that are underway. Again, we have a letter from the chairman. We have a verbiage on the role of MBTA and why it matters. We also get into congestion trends, which we receive data from the Transportation Planning Board regarding some of the congestion trends for our region and travel patterns. On page 9 is the 2-year program project selection process, so I did want to highlight that. In addition to, we have the corridor maps that we took out for public hearing, and the pop-outs that you see are some of the projects that the authority has funded. These are sample projects from fiscal years 14 through 16. So we have the studies, we have capital infrastructure, we have roadway. The authority has done a great job at multimodal projects and multimodal distribution. The highlight of the annual report, as same as last year, is the map. This map shows all of the projects that the authority funded for your fiscal year 2015-2016 program. You funded 37 projects for that particular program. And I do want to note your total funding for projects, as discussed when you adopted the program, the authority has funded $535 million worth of projects, regional transportation projects, in under 2 years. Moving on, we tried to clean up the chart that really detailed the planning and programming process and clean it up. There's a lot of arrows, a lot of if this, then that, and what happens regarding the authority's planning and process. We did note the regional revenues and funding allocations that we received per jurisdiction. And one thing that I want to highlight on page 16, the authority has committed approximately $704 million to regional and local projects from fiscal years 14 through 2016. The accompanying chart on page 17 shows the 2-year program, but that number, $704 million, is what we have for regional projects, and that also includes the 30% local projects. Again, on table 3, and what this is new, we didn't have this information for last year because sick people in localities were still getting this. These projects programming underway, but table 3 shows the projects that the localities are programming with their 30% revenue. So we did feel it was important to show that also. And even though there's no sunset clause or provision on the 30% funding, this goes to show that a lot of localities are advancing their 30% in addition to the 70%. And there, I should note that some of the projects that the authority has funded with their 70% revenues are also being funded with the 30% as well. Again, additional funding responsibilities. The authority is responsible for making recommendations for CMAQ and RSTP funds. The page 21 shows some of the authority events. We had the groundbreaking for the Route 28 projects back in May. We also had the ribbon cutting for the transit buses that the authority purchased, which was in September. And then we also have a section on planning for the future.
That yellow box is really our press release or press conference that we did to kick off the update of transaction. We had a press conference which marked some of the results of the benchmark survey. And this last page that shows the authority working regionally, it represents all of the localities' logos and the agency's logo. If you, once this is posted online, you can click on every logo and it will direct you to the website of the agency and locality. And there are some thank yous that I do have to say, because we, the six of us here at the authority, we do not do this by ourselves. Your staff were instrumental in helping us to get this done. Kamala on the authority then really took the lead on this. Thomas Wampler, who will probably never step foot in authority meeting, but he helped us tremendously. He worked for Fairfax County with the mapping. So we did want to say thank you. We received pictures from member jurisdictions. So this really was a collaborative effort regarding putting this report together.
Thank you. Any questions? I think this is phenomenal work. This is great. I can't show it to my wife because the first picture of it's got the ear. Thank you very much.
Gary, how many did that?
I counted
He
nine.
Said one, but I've counted
that was
about
last,
four or five.
That was more this year. We
nine.
More
nine.
Half of them have the beers. They don't count. Next year, can we please take motion pictures after comic book convention season?
And I hope we got a contribution from Shirley for the picture of in there to the NDT.
Okay, excellent. We do have some guests with us this evening. We want to introduce our first speaker this evening. We have with us the new general manager of WMATA, Mr. Paul Wiedefield. Mr. Wiedefield, thanks for joining us this evening. The floor is yours.
Thank you, and good evening, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I've been trying to get around the entire region just to introduce myself to everyone, and then just share with you some of my media priorities. I just started on November 30th, so I am getting out, and I know I've met a number of you, and I apologize if some of this is repetitive, but others I have not. What I thought I would do is just give a little bit of background on myself and then get into some of my priorities. Just by way of background, I do have 35 years experience in the transportation business, 10 in the private sector, and 25 in the public sector. I managed the capital program for the Maryland Department of Transportation for a number of years, and actually sat on the TPB for a number of years in that role in Washington. I was the CEO of BWI Airport for 10 years, actually two different stints, but for 10 years. So BWI is that facility. A lot of the stuff that we did, we've experienced that I worked on up there. I also ran the Maryland Transit Administration, which is a combination of subway, light rail, bus, paratransit, and the MARC commuter rail system. In fact, I did purchase a number of VRE cars, and I think it was 29 of them a few years ago from VRE. And so I've been in the region a long time, know the area. I've been on the board of directors for Washington Board of Trade for a number of years, and actually was on the board and still am on the board of the Washington Air Force Task Force. So I do know the area quite well. In terms of my priorities, there are three major ones that I'm focusing on coming out of the gate, and it's obviously deal with some of the issues that we've had to deal with as an HCA the last few years, and it's safety, service liability, and the fiscal business of the house. In terms of safety, it is the number one priority for me. It has to be our number one priority. Clearly, with some of the events that we've had, it's totally unacceptable for our customers and as an agency to operate that way. So we are under, the FTA has identified 200 findings, things that we have to correct. We've identified over 700 corrective actions. A number of those we have put in place, and we will continue to do that. But the point I want to make is that those are compliance issues, and that's not what the goal is here. It's not to meet a compliance of a federal agency. It is to be safe when we use the system. And yes, we'll hit the compliance issues along the way, but that is not the goal here. So we have... we're doing a national search right now for a new director of that Office of Safety, and we'll be making a selection there fairly soon, I believe. I'm creating a much stronger, independent group within the agency that will report directly to me, not in our operations arm, so that I'm aware of any issues and that we attack them immediately. But I am pleased with some of the steps that we have made over the last, particularly the last year or so. We have co-located fire personnel at our rail operations center. So there's immediate feedback if anything is going on in the system with that side of the response. We do now quarterly full exercises, emergency exercises. We have one in Virginia coming up shortly. We just completed one in Maryland about just in December. And we also have an excellent work relationship between our law enforcement, our chief of police, and the FBI, and other members of the law enforcement community. So that's very important. It's good to see that they work so closely together. In terms of my second priority, service reliability, just so you understand, to me, it's just not rail. It's rail, bus, and metro access. And it's not a mode issue. It's a customer service issue. And again, that's how we should think about what we do. But clearly, there's been a great focus on rail, and that's my immediate focus. Number of things I'm doing in that area is to basically get the 7,000 cars delivered as quickly as we can. We have 748 in order. We have 84 on property. We have 64 in revenue service today, and we're expecting 12 per month in the very near future. We've had some contractual issues there. I think we've cleaned those up. We'll know shortly on that. But as soon as we feel comfortable that we're getting the quality of vehicle that we are paying for, then this will start to roll off at a much quicker pace. So that is a high priority because, that, again, a lot of our issues are related to car, the age of our fleet. We also had a major issue with our parts for some of the vehicles that we have. We had apparently a year ago, we had moved into a process where we were following federal regulations on how we bought parts. That slowed down the process quite a bit. So the board in December gave us the ability to basically use non-federal process for that, and our own dollars for that. So that will speed up. We have 70 cars that are basically that are in storage until we solve that issue. So we'll be solving that over the next few months and get those cars back into the fleet. We did recently restore the 6-minute headways on the Orange and Silver lines after the state of Marbury power issues. So that is good news to get that back to where we want. And anything that I can do immediately, I will be doing. But again, it's got to be the safety need first, and I will do this as quickly as I can. In terms of the third priority, fiscal responsibility and fiscal management, you know, that's been documented very well in the press. The FTA has come in and done a thorough analysis of some of our issues, and basically we have responded with what we're going to do about them. They are monitoring us basically daily on how we perform. They're testing us and auditing audit exercises, and those are going well, so we're starting to get that house in order. We've also hired the board has hired the firm of McKinsey and Ernst & Young to help us with getting some of the processes set up the way we should. And again, from my perspective, the goal here is not the FTA compliance and the FTA issues, but to run the agency like a business within the public sector environment, to make sure that we're using the rider dollars wisely and all of your dollars, since the dollars come from the local governments and state in some cases, but that we're using those dollars wisely and efficiently, and we're accountable for them. So a big focus as part of that for me is the capital programming process. I don't think we've performed very well there. We've not spent the dollars that we've asked for at the rate that we've asked them, and we have to get that under control, and we have to get under control quickly before we ask for additional dollars from anyone. We need to update the capital lease inventory. We haven't done that in a number of years, and that should be the base of where we pull projects from, and we have a good understanding of what we're getting into before we put it in for construction, and then we deliver. So a lot of that is going on. I have entered the budgeting process midstream coming in. So I've asked the board, the LaMotta board, to give me a bit of a breather for this first year so I can get some of these things under control. So I've asked not to raise fares or to cut service this year, so we don't, you know, basically hit the customers at this time. And I've asked for a one-year capital programming commitment from them, and not the full six-year capital commitment that we normally ask for with the capital program. So that gives us a chance to basically get the house in order a bit and then come back and basically, you know, lay out what our plans are going for. You know, all three of these priority areas, safety, social liability, and fiscal management, it really all speaks to the customer. If we don't perform better for a customer, it doesn't matter. You know, that's what we're here to do. So that is the major focus that I will have. And that is achieved, I think, through listening, through communication, and through performance. And that's what we intend to do. In conclusion, obviously, there's a lot to do. We didn't get here overnight. It's going to take a lot of work to get to bring the curve back the other way, but I'm confident we can do it. I've been impressed with the staff in terms of their commitment, in terms of their professionalism. But we need to do a lot better than we've been doing, and I've made that very clear as well. So with that, I'd be glad to take any questions or comments that you have. Again, this is part of my stage where I'm trying to understand your issues as well. So thank you for your attention.
Any questions, Mr. Weaver?
Just a thought. I can tell you that even from the small jurisdictions here in Northern Virginia and the metropolitan area, we wish you great fortune, and I know you're working hard to accomplish what your needs are. So thank you for your service.
Mr. Chairman, we had the opportunity to hear from Mr. Weefeld yesterday at COG, and I know that he's been on the circuit meeting with folks, and I very, very much appreciate the outreach that he's been doing. And I said this yesterday at COG, but I would like to say it again, how much I appreciate his being present for the riders. And he's made it a point of really reaching out, being at platforms, being at stations, listening to what our riders have had to say, and as well as county officials and our jurisdictional staffs, but also for the workforce. We have a really a wonderful system in WMATA, in Metro. It is a system that, that has united the region. However, it's getting older and it's suffering from age, but also from some neglect over the years. And it's important that we not lose sight of the fact that it is a valuable asset for our region, and that it's important that we continue to invest in and continue to support the system. We have a great workforce in the WMATA workforce, and it's important that they too are supported. And I appreciate the fact that that there has been outreach to the workforce and outreach to the doers, the folks who are in the trenches, so to speak, providing the service. And so anyway, this is a new day. Also, this is an anniversary of the Metro system, 40th anniversary this year. And so I think it's important that, we consider this a year of renewal and look for opportunities to envision where we're going in the future, and making sure that, that we're helping and supporting that being done.
Mr. Weefeld, thank you very much for being with us tonight. And, I think it's clear you understand what you do, what your agency does, is kind of the linchpin to everything else we do. I'll just relate to a quick story. I serve on the PRTC board also. Several years ago, there was circumstances don't matter, but there was a discussion about action the PRTC could take that may have been helpful to Metro, and some of our very southern jurisdictions objected to our commenting. Metro's not our problem. We have to focus on VRE, because we're a VRE jurisdiction, or whatever the comments were. And the observation that was ultimately decided by the group was, it doesn't matter how well VRE is running, or the Omni-Ride buses are running, or frankly how well our roads are being built, if our core transit system isn't working properly. And you're obviously very aware of some of the concerns that we've heard from our constituents, but I'm glad to hear that you're making these commitments, and that your agency is making the commitments to helping us all deliver the services that all of our constituents, even outside of the Metro sphere of influence, are expecting and needing. So thank you very much. Before I know, we have another presentation, but before we do that, I'm going to take a chairman's prerogative, because we have someone here that we've never had this at an NVTA meeting, at least in the last 7 years. We have a scout with us this evening. He gets scouts. We get scouts in our board meetings probably a lot. But are you here, like, working on a citizenship in the community badge? Stand up. Stand up. We need your name, your troop, what your rank is, and where you go to school, or where, what community you're from, and where you go to school.
And where you
I like how you had to check. Thank you, sir. You will now always be able to say you are the first scout who came for citizenship of the community to an NVTA meeting. You're establishing a new precedent. You got recognized for it. Thank you very much. Okay. Another gentleman who's been on the road a bit, Mr. Allen. Come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure the young scout's going to be bragging about this all tomorrow. Making big man on campus for that. But, you know, I talked to the young man beforehand. Good to have somebody here who's actually going to ride some of the things we're developing. So, thank you very much for giving us some time, some very valuable time that you have to allow us to brief you on our Gainesville Haymarket extension project. Christine Hefner, who's the project manager, is with me, and she's going to do a lot of the presentation, but I'd like to kind of set the stage a little bit. We at VRE have been working very hard to put a lot of different business practices in place so that we're doing things the right way. And so among those, we developed a long-range system plan a few years ago. This actually got adopted about a year ago to identify what we want to do in the next 20, 30 years. And to support that, we last year also started a long-range financial plan. And PFM is, and Joanne Carter's here, not representing us, but Joanne's here. I think a lot of you know her. Her group has been helping us put together a financial plan to identify what our needs are. So as part of the system plan, we had identified a number of things that we wanted to do to add to the VRE system. One of them is a project that has been around for a while, the Gainesville Haymarket Extension. So Christine's going to talk about that, what we're doing in regards to advancing that project. Know that as we do this study and as we, if we are successful in accomplishing and a lot of the objectives that we have in making this project a real project, we will be adding service to operate on that. Not only the service that we operate on the Manassas line now, but adding additional trains. And so as part of the financial plan, we'd identified that ultimately we're going to need additional operating funds, as well as capital funds, but additional operating funds to pay for that service. And so there's a lot of things to solve as part of this effort, but that is one of them that I wanted to highlight. So I'll ask Christine to kind of go through the presentation, and we are here to answer your questions and provide you with information on this proposed extension.
Thank you. And I also wanted to just give an introduction to Jason Mumford, who is passing around the handouts. Jason's our project manager. He's with AECOM, and he may be familiar to all of you. He's also the project manager for the transaction update, so he's a busy guy, but we're really happy that he's involved in the Gainesville Haymarket extension. And the presentation is changed slightly from what was in your board kit, so that's why we passed out the handouts tonight for you. And tonight I'm going to provide an overview of the project to you and an update of where we are to date with our study. But more importantly, as Mr. Wiedefeld mentioned, we want to hear from you tonight and moving forward as we continue with the study. Get feedback. What are your concerns? What are the opportunities that we should really be focusing on? As the earlier speaker said, we think that the Gainesville Haymarket extension is really a project that can have regional benefit beyond the physical geographic location in Prince William County and really benefit the region. As we note here, somewhat preaching to the choir, I think that the benefits of Gainesville Haymarket and why it's important to advance this project now, but I do want to highlight that we are a very cost-effective way to increase peak capacity, to get people off the road and help to relieve congestion in the region. The study area is an 11-mile rail corridor that starts with the city of Manassas and extends to Haymarket, and at the western end is very close to the I-66 highway corridor. We are looking at adding new stations, adding track, but as Doug mentioned, also implementing higher frequency peak service, as well as down the road, new reverse peak service and midday service to really expand the window and the transportation choice that the area is providing to the region. We started our formal kickoff in November. We had a number of committee meetings that we heard from elected officials, we heard from jurisdiction staff, we heard from members of the community. A number of folks here tonight participated in that process. That's just the first step of hearing from people and getting input from all different range of opinions and people throughout the region on the project. There's a number of considerations that we're really focusing our current analysis on. I'm going to go through these relatively quickly so that we can have some time at the end for questions and feedback. But one of the ones, the areas that we really are focusing on is the alignment and the railroad right-of-way. Currently, the right-of-way has a single track. We know that there's room within the existing right-of-way for two tracks, but based on our discussions with Norfolk Southern, who owns the railroad, and who will be the one that will approve the VRE service, we think that there could be a need for up to three tracks and that that may not fit within the existing right-of-way. So we are looking at the existing railroad right-of-way and what expansion might be necessary to provide the infrastructure that's necessary for both VRE and Norfolk Southern to operate within this corridor. It's a high-priority freight corridor for them, freight coming from the south, through the Broad Run, past our Broad Run station, and then making the turn at Manassas out to Front Royal where there's an inland port. Station site selection is important. We're working very closely with Prince William County in particular, as well as the town of Haymarket, to identify potential station sites. The alternatives are being evaluated right now, and in the next couple of months, we'll have more information available to share with everyone on specific station sites that are under consideration and ultimately making a recommendation for stations. We're also developing ridership projections right now. This is a very high growth area for Prince William County. Its county plans to grow both jobs and population residents in this area, and VRE can be very important in helping the county to achieve those plans, providing a stimulus for economic development at the station areas and surrounding area. We're looking at also where the best locations of the stations might be, and one of the areas we're looking at is what's the future for our Broad Run station. This map shows existing ridership, that and the blue dots that you see are existing Broad Run riders. A lot of them live within the Linton Hall corridor, in the vicinity of the proposed extension, and we think they might shift but to a new station. But more importantly, there are people that are out there that aren't riding VRE. Broad Run might not be convenient to them, so we want to capture that travel market as well, and that's what Jason is helping us to identify. How many new riders might we gain? We think it'll be a fairly significant number of new riders. And we're also looking at the service. If we have this new station, do we need the Broad Run station? What's the trade-offs between maintaining service both through a Broad Run terminus and a Haymarket service terminus versus realigning the Manassas line to terminate only at a Haymarket station? So those are some of the things that we're looking at, and I know that there's a lot of interest among the public, and I'm sure all of you have interest in the results of that analysis. So that'll be available also in the next couple months. One of the other primary considerations we have is funding. That's a topic that's of interest to everyone. We're developing a funding plan for the project, looking at the potential mix of funding that would cover both capital and operating costs. We think that the project will be a strong candidate for federal funding through the Major Capital Investment Grant Program and the Tiger Grant Program. But also that it would be something that could be funded with state funds through the DRPT's Rail Enhancement Fund,
through the House Bill 2 process. We've already submitted the project for consideration and evaluation through the House Bill 2 process, as well as local funding with NBTA, other local funding, or even private funding through the private sector with proffers or other potential sources of funding. The current cost estimate for the project is between $400 and $500 million. That's really a very preliminary estimate based on previous studies. We're refining those costs right now so that we'll have a better idea of what the cost will be and what the funding mix might be. One thing regarding the NBTA funding, currently NBTA has contributed $1.5 million to the current study that's going on. That funding enabled us to go to the state and get another $2.8 million to complete the study. So we have a total of $4.3 million right now. We think that given the benefits that we believe the project can have to the region, additional NBTA funding can help us to leverage additional state funding and additional federal funding. And we'll be providing the funding plan that will outline some of the costs as well as the analysis that can be provided and as we move forward to help evaluate the project. One thing I didn't want to overlook and that our funding plan will address is operating costs. That's a key consideration, particularly in applying for federal funds. You not only have to be able to demonstrate the ability to pay for the capital costs, but be able to pay for both the ongoing operations of your current system as well as any new service and the extension. So that is very important. Currently, VRE, under its master agreement with the jurisdictions, is mandated to have a minimum 50% fare recovery rate, so 50% of the operating costs coming from passenger fares. The rest of the costs are covered currently by state operating assistance and a local subsidy, which is paid by each VRE member jurisdiction proportional to the ridership that from that jurisdiction that rides VRE. But as Doug mentioned, our legislative agenda includes a request for additional operating funding to be able to ensure the future of both the current VRE service levels and to expand to provide those benefits to the region that our system plan recommends that we do. So as with the capital funding, the operating funding will be a mix of funds. It may not be the exact percentages that you see here, but we'll be looking at a broad range of sources to address the operating costs as well. Just have a little bit more information. We've developed a set of goals for the extension, focused on a lot of the things that have been talked about already tonight that are important and are embedded in NBTA's process of evaluating projects. Our schedule for the current effort, which is shown in pink on this slide, is to complete in 2017. Our study, we're about 6 months into the process right now. We have another year and a half approximately to go. We'll be completing not only initial planning studies, but moving forward once we've identified station locations to do preliminary engineering design, as well as environmental analysis for those. Once we've completed this phase, the next phase that we hope we can move into and continue with the implementation of the project is final design, construction, with a goal towards starting revenue service sometime early 2022 timeframe. I do want to note that this schedule is both contingent on funding availability, but also Norfolk Southern's approval, and they are really a key decision maker in this process. The overall process beyond Norfolk Southern's role in providing approval for VRE to operate includes the VRE Operations Board, the jurisdictions in adopting a locally preferred alternative and moving through the NEPA process and advancing the preliminary engineering and finalizing the funding commitments, being able to move forward with confidence that we have a commitment on the funding is critical as well. So I wanted to thank everyone for the time we have tonight, but also provide you an opportunity now to ask questions, to give us feedback on things that I may have overlooked or that we may not have addressed tonight that are really important that we consider in this study.
Let me just add very briefly before you turn it over is we will be adding train service on this extension when we extend it. That obviously goes all the way into D.C. So we serve Manassas with more service, Manassas Park, Fairfax County, Alexandria, Arlington, and then, of course, D.C. The other thing is we report to two commissions, so obviously the commissions will have a role in approving anything else. But.
Questions for Mr. Allen or Mrs. Heffner? Mr. Gershon.
Doug, I know we've talked about this before, but tell me where you are with Norfolk Southern, because that is the linchpin. I mean, we don't go anywhere without
right.
what their decisions.
Right. We have an agreement with them. We are funding their analysis. In fact, they're using Dewberry, which is right across the street here, to help them here locally identify what they think they need. Jason and his team are developing comparable, here's what we think you need also, and the goal is to get together and compare that. We've had a couple of good meetings, one face-to-face meeting with the engineers before the holidays, that we had some good dialogue. So we're putting together the technical information. It'll come down to train operational modeling to ensure for them that what we are planning and the capacity we're planning to add to their railroad will not harm what they need to do. They're a business. They need to be making money. So that's what we're doing, making sure that we're staying in lockstep with them. And as that comes to get more information, then we'll have a much better feel for it. But that's a very important thing to keep in mind, that Norfolk Southern needs to be okay with what we're planning.
Can that happen in 16?
It possibly could happen in 16, yes. Our goal is to have it happen before we get too far into the engineering work.
Because that was always Stelman's idea, if you're not from the
Right, right. And it was a very valid point. Yeah. We have to make sure that, that we don't go too far without making sure they're comfortable with it.
Yeah, I just want to, on the slide on the key consideration alignment. Right now, in the segment you're looking at adding, there's a single track with a passing in that one area, right?
Yes.
And with a passing siding at Gainesville. And the proposal, you're looking at options, or the proposal is for two full tracks or three full tracks?
I think ultimately we'll end up with, well, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but tomorrow. yes, I think we'll end up with at least two tracks to begin with enough right-of-way to put a third track in, and perhaps in certain locations enough right-of-way to perhaps do more than three tracks. But what, I don't think we're going to necessarily end up needing to build all three tracks, but that's part of the analysis we'll be doing with the Norfolk Southern. But we'll definitely add another track. We may, and we definitely will have enough right-of-way to put three tracks in. Just don't know if we're going to have to build all three tracks to begin.
And then that discussion, as you said, about taking away a station, right?
At well,
Broad Run.
Yeah, that's what we're going to be looking at.
Stations. I'm sure people that ride that from Broad Run would have some thoughts on that.
And we anticipate that and anticipate having a good discussion. I think what we'll have is the analysis to really identify, is it necessary to do that? Is it a good idea to do it? And if it is, and as you can see from the map, the blue dots are where people come from to go to the Broad Run station. And as Christine pointed out, some of the new stations are going to be more convenient to most of the people who are using Broad Run. So there could be some angst with that, but that's part of the process we want to work with.
Mr. Chair, thank you. First of all, let me thank Jay for leading me into something that I wanted to bring up, but I have to say a word or two before I get to my point, and that is, so I'll start this way. First of all, Manassas has been supportive of this all along the way, as Doug knows, and we think it's the right thing to do from a regional perspective and working closely with Prince William County as well and others. It's always made great sense to me, and I'm so glad that Fairfax and Loudoun are
are seeing the future with regard to taking Metro to Dulles. Just makes perfect sense in so many ways. We've seen airports throughout the world that have had that kind of service to those airports for many years. Just a point, though, and I hope you don't forget Broad Run Station. And it's okay to look at those blue dots up there and connect them to the larger blue dot there at the Broad Run Station. But one of the things, although it's noted there on the map, you don't see the runways. And in particular, if you're considering not only morning service and evening service, but midday service, don't forget the fact that you've got Manassas Regional Airport there, which really serves the region and is growing leaps and bounds. And that VRE service could, particularly if you have noonday service, could and potentially would allow greater intermodal service, including air traffic in and out of Manassas Regional Airport, particularly for commercial. I'm not talking about scheduled airlines, but I'm talking about business flights in and out of Manassas Regional Airport. So I hope you'll keep that in the back of your mind.
Question that's actually relevant. I mean, let me acknowledge, Doug, you and I have talked about this before. It's home from a Prince William perspective in a big way, but it's got to be very relevant, actually, to the authority as well. You talked about it being important to the FTA that there be a demonstrated commitment to operating. They don't want to put tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars into capital that we're not prepared to operate. The policy of the authority has been similar, although I suspect FTA has a definition of what that means. I mean, they draw a box and said, if you've checked, you've done these things, you've committed to the operating, or maybe not. Maybe they're vague about that. What defines a commitment to operation?
Yeah, they look at your financial plans and your financials, and you need to demonstrate that you have the funds to be able to operate it. And we would be doing the same thing even if we weren't going to the Federal Transit Administration dollars. You know, we would definitely do that with the operation board.
A reasonable person might argue that the lion's share of the increased operating costs will be borne by Prince William riders. That in new stations in Prince William County. And we don't, riders from Fauquier and from Culpeper don't count toward that calculation,
right?
So you know, the other new folks we're going to get possibly don't factor in anyway. So I guess I'll look to Ms. Backman and say something we're going to have to talk about, not just in the context of this. I mean, we will be obviously analyzing this project for funding at some point in time, but really for a lot of our transit funding projects is we probably need to develop as an authority a similar framework to that which FTA uses to define what constitutes a commitment to operations. And it seems to me as close as it can be to FTA's requirements makes a lot of sense so that agencies like Metro and VRE don't have to jump through two completely separate hoops in order to demonstrate that. But we've had projects that have fallen off the list, transit projects, because the agencies have determined they can't make those commitments. So something that I think we maybe want to be looking at really in the context of the 2017 program is putting a box around what we need in terms of making those decisions. So that would, and as I pointed out to Mr. Allen, Prince William County does five-year budgeting. The first year of operating this extension is 6 years away, which means our budget a little over a year from now will have to show in its out years some of that operating funding. And I can tell you now, we haven't planned for it yet. But we've got 15 months, I guess. I'm just going to figure out how we're going to get this. Excellent. Anything else, Mr. Allen or Ms. Hafner? Excellent. Thank you both very much for being here.
Thank you.
Okay, those presentations. Now on to our action items. First item on the agenda is the election of a chair and vice chair for calendar 2016, and I'll look to Mr. Parrish.
I get to take over the meeting. At any rate, the nominating committee made up of myself and Sharon Bolivar. First of all, Sharon, thank you so much for working very closely together on this, and the nominating committee would like to nominate the following people. First of all, we did have conversations with a group of people, and of course, amongst ourselves. I'd like to first nominate Marty Noe as our continuing chairman for another year. Marty has graciously accepted that so far as he is concerned. Of course, we have the responsibility to act on that. And also, the nominating committee would like to nominate as vice chair Scott Silverthorne. And so I would put those people into a motion that we nominate or we elect Marty Noe as chair, Scott Silverthorne as vice chair of the authority for a year.
Seconded by Mr. Fassett. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much.
You did it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sharon.
And I'll just say thank you for your confidence in me for another year. I'm going to skip actually to item 9. I'm going to skip over item 8. Do item 9 because we're in the process of electing people. We annually have to appoint a new town representative for each year. This year, Mr. Foreman, I think there's a name for the committee that nominates the town representative, the Coalition of Towns, or
yes,
sure,
we'll
go with Coalition of Towns. The Coalition of Towns has recommended to us Dumfries Mayor Jerry Foreman, who I believe also at this time serves as our PCAC chair as well.
And we looked into that, and I can still hold the PCAC.
You can still hold that. Excellent. So that said, is there a motion to approve Mr. Foreman?
So moved.
Second. Motion by Mrs. Bullen, a second by Mr. Parrish. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Mr. Foreman.
And thank you for the title of the coalition.
You get like a logo made.
Came out with a Star Wars movie, came out with a coalition. We're good.
There we go. Okay. Okay, now let's go backwards to number 8. The, you know what? Let me do this. Let me sit here. Hold on. No, these others are going to wait for the bylaws. Okay, so let's go to the bylaws. And interestingly, we have no one here tonight from the bylaws committee. Oh, Mr. Silver, I'm sorry.
Except I missed because of my illness. I have been missing a couple meetings, so the last one, the last two actually, I missed. Comments.
But Mrs. Hines chaired that committee and chose not to seek re-election. And because of a quirk in our bylaws, in our existing bylaws, which I don't think changes in this one, our meetings are 28 days apart, generally. Our rules say that we have to have two readings. It has to be advertised for at least 30 days. So we weren't able to take this up at the last meeting by 2 days. Yeah, just didn't think that through. And so, Ms. Backman, are you going to give us a report on this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As you stated, we did have the bylaws on your agenda for December as an information item because we were 28 days out, 2 days shy of the 30-day requirement. Just to go over briefly some of the changes, Chair Hines went over this last month. We did make some recommended updates to the bylaws because they were adopted in 2008, last amended in 2010. We wanted to clean them up a little bit, so we moved sections that were really in alignment with procedures we struck those and we'll put them in a procedures document. We made some code changes due to recodification. We included a placeholder which would allow remote participation, and it is a placeholder because in my report, in my executive director's report, we're actually working with the Council of Council to develop a policy because the law says you got to have a policy really if you're going to allow electronic participation. So we have a placeholder in the bylaw. It creates provision regarding the secondary designee to the authority, and it creates two new standing committees, the Planning and Programming Committee, which will supersede the current Project Implementation Working Group. As you know, the working groups were always meant to be temporary as we kick-started the implementation of HB 2313. Project Implementation has been the last working group that's still been ongoing, if you will, under that name. So we're recommending changing that group to the Planning and Programming Committee. And we're also recommending the creation of the Governance and Personnel Committee.
Can I just interrupt a quick question on that? Have we formally dissolved the other four working groups?
They have been formally dissolved at various times.
Mr. Bashani just shook his head. He's thinking the same thing I'm thinking.
Well,
the finance is superintendent.
We actually, but we never actually, and the reason I ask this is, for a period of time, we operated with a finance working group and a finance committee.
So what the authority decided is Mayor Yule, who is the chair of the financial working group, he would come to the authority and say, you know, the work of the financial working group is done. We will check records to see if
you... Yeah. just before he left office, he told me that it was done. So we'll take that up in a few minutes.
I did want to note there were recommended quorum changes to the PCAC because there were some difficulties in the PCAC achieving a quorum with their current members of 14. So that's changed, if you will, recommended changes of quorum of 5 members. And we also just cleaned up some language. And I wanted to note under item H2, we did add a sentence that was added to the opening section of the committee's article, which is Article 5, stating that the authority will strive in the appointment of members to committees that represent various perspectives. Ms. Oliver, I think you raised that issue at first read, if you will, of the bylaws.
Anything else?
No.
I want to, I have an issue that I want us to discuss a little bit because there's a part that I'm struggling with, but let me see if others have questions first or comments. Okay. So let's go back to the committees. We have one standing committee under the current bylaws, the Finance Committee.
That is correct.
Which is made up of 5 members of the authority to be appointed by the chair, including a chair and a vice chair of the committee.
Yes.
Okay. We create in this document 2 new standing committees, a governance committee and a planning and programming committee.
Yes.
Also made up of 5 members to include a chair and a vice chair, all to be appointed by the chairman. But then there are other additional rules that govern the makeup of those other 2 committees that do not get applied to the finance committee.
Yes.
Explain that.
Because
I'm not sure it fully, because it doesn't make sense to me to have, if there's a reason to have different rules for the structure of different committees, so be it. But if there's not a good reason to do it, they shouldn't be different structures.
So, Mr. Chairman, you're referring to the, the membership says the members shall include a chairman and a vice chairman and 2 MBTA committee chairs and a general assembly member. And that's for governance and for planning and programming.
Yeah, and here's my concern with that. So if we have 3 standing committees and 2 of the standing committees have a rule that say that 2 of the members shall be chairs of committees, it implies that the chair of that committee is not one of those 2, or would it be duplicative to mention it. So it suggests that the chair of the finance committee ends up on all 3 committees, and I don't think that was the intent.
And that was not the intent.
Okay. And it implies that the chair of the governance committee and the chair of the programming committee have no impact on the finance committee, which is probably fine, frankly. So I'll make an observation. It seems to me that at least for the programming committee, that rule is just not helpful. Because what it does is it puts people on both committees that may not have the time or inclination to serve on both committees. But frankly, if one is the chair of the committee, being on the other committee would seem like a lot of work, frankly. What I said just makes sense? I felt a little rambling there. But
one correction.
Yeah.
We have... When you started, you said we only have 1 committee?
Under the current bylaws that have not yet been...
the PCAC under the...
That's not a committee of this...
That's a statutory...
That's a statutory committee. It's not
it.
A bylaws
yes.
committee. Great question.
I'm with you.
What would the change be?
It seems to me that the change would be to make the structure of... And I'll just start with the planning and programming committee. To make the structure the same as the existing finance committee rules... 5 members of the authority appointed by the chairman to include a chair and vice chair, full stop.
How would you do that, Mr. Chair?
As an amendment,
to the proposed bylaws?
Just there's to take the proposed bylaws and I'll turn the pages too fast. Going to page 10 of this document, section D, subsection 1, the committee shall consist of 5 members of the NBTA appointed by the chairman for staggered 2-year terms. The members shall include a chair and vice chair.
What about the general assembly member? Is that included in the plan?
Yeah.
We don't have that rule for finance, do we?
No.
So you just want to get rid of the rest of the sentence?
I would just want to get rid of the rest of the sentence.
Okay.
I mean, that wouldn't preclude General Assembly members from serving.
Correct point.
We could put them on. Frankly, they're not here, so I can say things about them. Their participation thus far in our other committees has been minimal. So if they want to serve, I would love to have them on, but whether we'll succeed, they'll have to decide whether that's something they want to do.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to strike that verbiage for both committees?
Well, we'll definitely restrict it for planning and program. To me, that just makes sense. Now, the question would be, and I would look for opinions on this, one might argue that there is value of saying that the chair of planning and programming and the chair of finance should be members of the governance committee, because those committees help, you know, what do? We have money and we have projects. That's, you know, so those two committees kind of oversee everything we do as a functionality, but maybe that's not value added. And I'm a little ambivalent about that one personally, but since it's, you brought it up, I'm just as happy to strike it and just say that each three committees just need 5 people. And if there is overlap, so be it.
Chairman, this being my first meeting, I have a lot of thoughts on this.
This is your first meeting of this organization. This is not your first meeting of much more.
I would say that it's consistent to strike it, because you can have that conversation as chair with either of them to see if it fits their schedule and meets the needs, and make that appointment if appropriate, but without requiring it.
I second that. No, it's not a motion, but I second that.
And we want a motion on the table to...
So, sure, why don't you...
I move the amendments to the bylaws as proposed in the original distribution, and we'll go back and make the changes.
So we've got two suggested changes for discussion. So I don't think I had anything else. Any other issues on this that people wanted to bring up? Questions? Monica, were there other things that were discussed at the committee that we need to bring forward for the group's consideration?
Yeah. When we talk about a form for the committees, I know you just talked about there will be possibly a new way to have people attend these meetings via electronically or by phone if they need to. With if you're on the phone, would you be considered as part of the quorum? Okay, you have to be present in the room to be part of the quorum.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, the way the state law is carved out is you first have to have a policy, and that policy has to recognize there must be a physical quorum. But upon achieving a physical quorum, then people can start participating by phone.
Okay.
And is there also not something in state law, and I wouldn't have to address it fully tonight, that those participating electronically in some way have to be in a public place? Is that still a rule? Okay.
I thought they could be in a public place as long as you said they were not in a public place under the code.
That would make sense.
They could be in a hotel room.
That's why.
Right.
There's no requirement. They can be anywhere.
They can be anywhere. You just have to say that they're not in a public place when you say it.
We'll figure that out. We're not making that policy then. Okay. You're probably right, but we'll figure that stuff out later. Okay. So there's nothing else that was a concern for the committee. So we have, I did have one other question that did come up, and I don't think we got an answer last month. These new rules clarify, we've been using the word alternate, we're now using the word secondary member, but it clarifies how a member of this committee can have a substitute in their place. Does that rule allow that secondary member to serve in the regular member's place at the committee level?
I don't think so.
No. I don't think there's anything here that I didn't read anything that precludes it.
So I know where you're going with this, Mr. Chairman. We had discussions where can the non-authority member serve on authority committee?
We decided that as a full member, the answer was yes.
As a full member, the answer was no. But
could they serve as an alternate?
And I would have to defer to counsel.
I think we think that might have to be a substantive amendment to the bylaws. In other words, don't you? If you're going to allow secondary designees of members, then you might have to put that in there. Beyond these, to represent the other person on the subcommittee. I don't see it as allowing it.
Looking at this, the chief elected officer may, in his or her discretion, appoint one secondary designee in accordance with procedures established by the authority. So it's functionally silent, and I'm thinking, like, you know, we're in Dillon Rule State, so we've always been told if it doesn't say it, you can't do it. But
my view would be that we would develop a procedure so that the member can designate this secondary member. We're really just trying to stay within the statute. But the question, if I understand it, is that once that secondary person has assumed the position, can they then attend committee meetings that the regular member is a member of?
Right.
And I think that would be require a bylaw amendment that, quite honestly, under the current procedures in the bylaws and the proposed ones, could not be adopted tonight.
So the answer is, as proposed tonight, that secondary member could not attend the Finance Committee, the Program Committee.
That's correct.
But we may want to revisit this later.
It's a future amendment.
Okay. That's excellent.
I think just to clarify, they can attend, they just can't be the voting.
Sure, yeah, they can absolutely attend.
And can I clarify that in terms of this amendment that you've just been reading about the secondary designee? Assumed here is that secondary appointee designee has a vote on this body
when attending
in lieu of the
primary designee.
Correct.
Yes, that is.
That's presumed. It's just not presumed that they can do the same on a committee.
I think the committee appointments are name specific.
Okay. And fine, and again, I guess I don't care what the answer is, but it's going to come up at some point in time. So we better have an answer before it comes up.
So if you adopt these bylaws, then the Governance and Personnel Committee would have to undertake that.
Right. Okay. That's all right. Looking for any other comments on this before we take action. So we have a motion on the floor as presented. I will look to the maker and seconder of the motion to ask the amendments that I proposed in terms of the committee memberships, are those accepted as a friendly amendment to the motion?
From my perspective, yes. It's on page 10, and it's 10 at the top of the page, E2, removing everything after the word vice chairman, and on B1, removing everything after the word vice chairman, correct?
Yes.
And that's a friendly amendment. I agree.
Accepted by the seconder. Okay. Last chance, any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Right, thank you very much. Motion carries unanimously. And we'll come back and talk about these committees a little more at the end of the meeting. Okay, we have the appointment of Finance Committee Chair. We'll come back. I want to come back to that appointment. Item 11, reappointment of two technical advisory committees for 3-year terms. We're going to reappoint Mr. Randy Boyce and Ms. Meredith Judy for 3-year terms. I want to take all these committees back at once. Item 14, the CMAQ RSDP reallocation request for the town of Vienna. Ms. Backman. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the authority, the town of Vienna is requesting in front of you. We, the RJAC, reviewed back in October. It's a reallocation of $130,000. The town of Vienna had other funds to cover that particular project. The town is now requesting that money be reallocated to the SCIMP and the TIP. And the JAC recommends approval.
Any questions?
So moved.
Motion by Mr. Parrish. Second from Mr. Fassett. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much. Okay, we'll stay. Monica and I went around and around about how to go about doing this. So now we have in front of us appointments to the 3 committees, 2 of which we just created. And because I wasn't sure how we were going to deal with the bylaws, we made the decision not to try to populate them in advance of the meeting for fear that we would populate them and then find out the rules didn't allow the population that we had come up with. What I will look to the authority for, we can sit here and try to work out these committee appointments, or better yet, how about Monica will send out an email in the next day or two to all of the members, soliciting feedback on which committees people would like to serve on.
Absolutely.
We will compile that information. And without being able to promise that everyone will be appointed to the committee they want to be appointed to, we will hopefully, there'll be enough diversity and interest that we'll be able to come up with an answer. Does that work?
Great idea, Mr. Chairman.
Excellent. And then we'll make the appointment via email and we'll post it to the website once it becomes official.
This is exactly why you got reelected.
Thank you.
not that I would want to be a chair or vice chair of one of the groups, but when people respond to Ms. Backlund, should they indicate whether they want to be a chair or vice chair of the committee?
Sure. That's a good question. That's an excellent question. Yeah, if you're particularly interested in being a chair or vice chair, or, and I know I've already had this conversation with one member who shall remain nameless, if you strongly don't want to be a chair or vice chair, and I got one of those already on this issue, then let me know that too. Certainly. Excellent. Okay. Okay. We're done with action items. We have a couple of discussion items, but one of them is really big, which is why I don't deal with committees tonight. So, Mr. Pashadi, talk to us about the 40 or so bills that have already been filed that affect this organization in some way.
Mr. Chairman, in your package, you have a blue sheet. Noel Dominguez sent her greeting from Richmond. She's been busy trying to collect all the bills that are maybe of interest to you. And so what I'd like to do is kind of run down, particularly the first several pages, is because there are bills that directly affect the authority, directly affect some major projects here in Northern Virginia. The first bill is House Bill.
And before you move on too much, I'll look for objections to this plan. I think what I'd like to do is some of these bills are fairly innocuous, either in terms of they're part of our legislative plan or they're sort of harmless to the organization. Some of these may be sort of obviously a bad idea to us. There may be some that need a little bit of discussion. I think what I'd like to do is go through them one by one, and if there's questions, take them up to the relative to that bill as we go along, rather than trying to come back, because it'll muddle the discussion too much, I guess. So, go ahead.
Okay, the first bill, House Bill 190, is similar to House Bill 403 and Senate Bill 413. What this bill does is it changes the code that affects the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority. Currently, the code requires you to use estimates prepared by the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service in allocating the administrative budget for the authority and also in the voting procedures. And what it changes that from estimates, from projections to estimates. So the current code talks about Weldon Cooper's projections, and it changes it to estimates. Your legislative committee did have a discussion about these bills, of legislation like that, and chose not to recommend any position to you when they prepared the legislative report. I think the concern that was raised during those discussions was that it does provide the opportunity for other changes to be made in the NDTA's code requirements. The actual change itself is probably not that significant, but it does open a door for other potential changes. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So, and actually, Tom references, I should note, Ms. Bashu is the chair of our legislative committee that has already reviewed most of these, or at least the issues surrounding
them. Well, Arlington County had the biggest issue with it, if I recall. So, if I remember, the projection, they use projections, right?
Projections is what's called for in NDTA statute.
And the projections, they're projecting 20 years out. So it's really kind of throwing a dart at the wall. Estimates are a little more accurate, but the entire state, this is for the entire state, they use projections. For Arlington County is adversely impacted by the projections.
Yeah, but we actually lost population or something. Kind of crazy.
Which implies that someone else at this table benefits from
the projections. Thank you, Marty. Yes, somebody else at this table benefits. So it was just really not something I thought it would be wise for us to weigh into, because it would definitely be pitting one jurisdiction against another. So, that's why we felt as a committee that it's best to leave it as it is. This really just kind of came up. It's always been projections. It really kind of have just come up in recent years with Arlington County's density and the growing, and that's what's become the issue. But you're right. It adversely impacts Arlington. Not a lot. I mean, it's not devastating, but it does have. But, again, it would pull from another jurisdiction benefit.
And, frankly, it seems that benefit versus adversity is a double-edged sword on this issue. increased population gives a jurisdiction more voting strength, but also requires a larger contribution to the operating of this agency. So if you care more about voting strength and money, any questions on
that? I wasn't aware of this. I'm appreciative of the regional collaboration by the patron, though.
The patron may not be aware that there's an adverse effect on Arlington. Perhaps there could be some opportunity to reach out and just raise that issue.
I would stand by. I'll just say this. It seems that the wise move, right? This could be an arm wrestling match in a minute here. Once we figure out who benefits, then it'll get ugly. All right.
Just to clarify, though, I thought what you said is that right now we use projections. That the projections that Weldon Cooper's come up with, the one locality that, I've heard about this for years, that truly is inaccurate for us, are the projections of losing population. But this actually would change it for MBTA and use what might be seen as more accurate estimates. Is that?
That is the argument. I don't know if it's the correct argument, but right.
So I don't know the difference particularly between estimates and projections myself.
Well, it's just we're looking at, as I understand it, we're looking at length of time. Projections are 20 years out, whereas the estimates, I think, are only 5 or 7 years. So you're going to get a more accurate description of the jurisdiction really using the estimate than you are by
rather than looking way long. Okay.
So it's probably not so bad then.
It's not.
The changes were not significant for any jurisdiction. However, as Chairman Nelly noted, if your population estimate is higher than the projection, you get both additional voting strength theoretically in a vote where it's not unanimous, and theoretically, and then as a result of that, you also pay a higher percentage than the MBTA person.
It's not
dramatic. That's
what you're saying.
And if I could, Mr. Chairman, I think the largest increase regarding contributions to the authority's operations budget would come from Prince William and Loudoun County, because they are the two jurisdictions which would see the increase in population. Now, there would be an increase in Alexandria also, but across the board, just looking at how it would impact the localities of the authority, when we were trying to run some numbers on what this would do, the largest increase regarding the operations budget because of the increased population would be for Prince William and Loudoun County. Some is just flat out, it's no increase at all. And then others, it's a little decrease.
And also, too, if I remember the debate, I know council wasn't there, but I thought somebody said if, in fact, we did change it, you'd have to also change HB 2313, and who would want to open that up again? Exactly. So,
no, I think that was the concern.
That was the concern, right, exactly.
By putting this statute in play,
yes,
for a very small change,
frequently I'll get a call from a subcommittee chair saying, the night before a hearing saying, what do you guys really think of this? I think we can articulate, unless I'm hearing objections, that we articulate that there's no position, although express the concern that we haven't expressed a position on this specifically, but we don't want to use this as leverage to open up the rest of the
house.
Keep it single purpose, and we won't quibble with it.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, moving on to House Bill 718, Delegate Lemunyan. What this bill does, it requires the CTB to solicit input from localities, metropolitan planning organizations, transit authorities, transportation authorities, other stakeholders in the development of the process. One of those groups is specifically called out as MBTA. Staff has reviewed this. CTB currently does have a public hearing process, and now with the HB2 process, the only projects that the CTB is going to be considering for the bulk of the money are projects that have been submitted by local governments or transportation agencies. But that's what the bill does. It gives CTB specific direction to include a variety of organizations, including MBTA, and getting comments on their program before they adopt it.
Which happens anyway.
Correct. It says passages bill wouldn't really change our procedures.
Right.
Correct. Moving on to House Bill 723. This essentially transfers the powers and duties of the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission to the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority. Mr. Chairman, you and Chairman Cassette chaired a
committee on
lengthy working group on this.
And
your colleague,
too. And Mike Mang is no longer with us. He's still with us. No longer an elected official. Yeah, horrible. The Commission on Commissions recommended that we leave this alone.
Been there, done that. Or been there, didn't do that. Right.
Mr. Chairman, are we sending a letter on this one or something?
We're not in favor of this.
It's a horrible idea.
Just as the guy from the one jurisdiction who's not a member of TC, I'm fine with that. But no, I have no problem. I mean, our existing policy has been for 5 years now, probably. The report on committees on committees.
So
the question though stands, are we going to communicate that?
Yes.
I think we should.
Okay.
And I think the best way to do it is a letter that reminds them that we studied this a few years ago and determined, I think the main determination was not whether it was a bad idea or not, it was mainly determination that it just wasn't feasible, that it would require, it would create a ripple effect that would make more bureaucracy, not less.
All right, House Bill 724, Delegate Lemonian. What this does is it essentially takes your voting procedures, which call for any vote to require 2/3 of the population, 2/3 of the jurisdictions, and 2/3 of the members present, and imposes that voting requirement on the North Virginia Transportation Commission. So it doesn't have a direct impact on this organization, but it is using your voting techniques elsewhere. So we just wanted to bring it to your attention.
I'll defer to the MVTC members if they have.
As an MVTC.
Go ahead.
Whether we write something or because it's not really about us, it's about MVTC, probably MVTC should write something.
I would think the MVTC should communicate its position.
Yes.
And if asked, the MVTA would say, talk to Mrs. Coyner and she'll tell you what.
Yeah. I think that's fine.
All right, 726, what this does is it says all monies collected from tolls in Planning District 8 that are imposed after January 1st, 2016 will be deposited in a fund, and that money would then be distributed to NVTA to allocate to projects that can be used to alleviate highway congestion. So this would provide additional monies to the authority, however, the way that the current projects are structured outside the Beltway on I-66, the project is structured that those tolls support the investment of private contractor potentially to implement the improvements. Inside the Beltway, those tolls have been designated to go to the Northern Virginia Transportation. So this would be a significant change in how two current projects that are under discussion would be.
Like funding away that would otherwise be used to help pay up to operate and to reimburse
Correct.
The private partner.
That would give the money to you.
Which would be lovely, but then there would be a deficit.
I think I get the conversation, but I wonder what the definition of excess toll revenue is.
That's technically the money greater than what the operating cost of the project is, and paying off the debt service.
So this is one that I've gotten some calls about already, and I'll share some of the conversations. But boil this down. Currently, the expectation is that excess revenues from 66 outside the Beltway will be managed by this body. And excess revenues generated by the Inside the Beltway project would be managed by the commission. I do know that there are a few jurisdictions, mine included, I believe the city of Manassas and maybe Manassas Park, I'm not sure, please, Ms. Rachel, tell me if I'm wrong, that have taken the legislative position as a jurisdiction, that that's a good idea. I know there are probably NVTC jurisdictions who have opposed that. When I've been asked by legislators about this, I've said there's likely to be division within the authority based on parochial perspective. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe everyone thinks it should come here. But, yeah,
Mr. Chairman, I think I don't know that I'd call it parochial because I think it's more of it's a broader question. And Delegate Rust said it the best when we were dealing with the inside the Beltway question, is that the decision there was very much to have the NVTC and the local governments involved in that body make those decisions about the prioritization of the use of those funds. Outside the Beltway, there is it's a very different project, and there is a very different part of that, a compromise and a decision about how the funds generated would be dedicated in the context of the Outside the Beltway project. There's going to be a 395 project. I expect there's discussion about, you know, what the state's thinking is NVTC and PRTC having the responsibility for discussion of those use of those funds. So in my mind, not only is some of this already been established, but this in effect would undermine, really tear apart agreements that have already been made and agreed to throughout the region. So I would argue that this is another one, unlike the one before it, which really is an NVTC question, let them deal with it. This is one that does affect the authority, and I would think similar to the earlier one where we would send a letter or include it in a letter, a statement of opposition to this.
I have to, my jurisdiction has taken a vote on this. Let me ask a question. Did the legislative committee make a recommendation on this issue?
Yeah. It was an official recommendation. What the legislative committee discussed was if this were to proceed, it should specify which facility, meaning that it should state that it should be I-66 outside the Beltway. Because during the discussion, someone said, well, what if Prince William wanted to toll Prince William Parkway or things like that? That the way the verbiage of the bill read,
every toll
facility would come, or the excess tolls would come to the
So the recommendation of the committee was to make an amendment that made it explicit to 66 outside the Beltway. Which is probably not the purpose of the bill as currently drafted. But that position would obviate the concern.
Yeah, but I would stand with Fairfax on this one. And the rest of you, I think it's broader than that. I think it's a regional question.
Can we take a vote on this? Everything's a waiting vote.
Mr. Chairman, I see the point that you made earlier, amending the bill to just deal with I-66 outside the Beltway would probably change the patron's intent here, but it may be something that the authority could reach some.
And I did speak with the patron. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but when I expressed some of the discussions at the legislative committee, I don't want to say seemed amenable. He said, I understand that. So
yeah. It's hard to tell what that means.
I think the patron's made up his mind on this. I don't think he cares much. The patron doesn't care much what anyone else thinks, I don't think. Anyway, okay. Please.
My inclination would be to oppose that we not support this because, even if we try to fix it and say that this only applies to outside the Beltway, that's not what the patron of the bill is trying to do anyway. So chances are, he's not going to fix it to do that. That's not what he's trying to do. And if what he's trying to do is get to the inside the Beltway, that causes everything to unravel. And so I would, it would be my inclination to, you know, just to oppose this and to explain those things.
Well, I think the outside the Beltway, we don't know if it's a P3, we can't do that. I mean, the private sector has to make money. That's
right.
Why they
right.
make the investment. Right. So if it's a P3, I think this is not even a... Yeah. So then it becomes, you know, the inside the Beltway.
395.
Or
395.
Or
395, yeah. Or, as Ms. Backman mentioned, the way it's worded, if Prince William chose to build the Prince William County Parkway, it would send the revenue to you.
I'm counting voting members. Okay.
So inside the Beltway, please help me. Is it all just Arlington?
No.
No, that's okay. Falls Church.
Arlington, Falls Church, Fairfax.
A little bit of Fairfax. So it's three jurisdictions.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. It's actually... The MBTC is all the members.
Yeah, I realize
would have,
that. No.
They would all have a role. But you mean where is the roadway?
Yeah,
the
I'm saying inside the Beltway, the three counties that are...
It's Falls Church, Fairfax, and Arlington
so
are the three counties in which the quarters
yeah,
located.
Yeah, touches where it resides, yeah.
Correct. But the funding
is
not
yes.
limited to those jurisdictions.
Yeah,
it could be Loudoun County for
yeah,
commuter buses.
Yeah, it could
be Alexandria.
Loudoun,
but everyone in the body has a role
right.
in determining
and the money could be used, you know, for...
Well,
no,
a commuter bus
yeah.
service that
yeah.
that could then use the you know
sure.
the new lane. So.
Sure, but it's the members
so,
of MBTC that would.
So let me articulate Prince William's position on this, and I think some other I know at least one other jurisdiction took this position. And that is, Prince William, among some other jurisdictions at this table and in the region, do not have representation on MBTC, and there's. Very good reasons we don't have representation in MBTC. We have representation on PRTC. They're different bodies with slightly different responsibilities and different geographical definitions. A not at all insignificant portion of the tolls being paid on the Inside the Beltway project will be paid by Prince William or Manassas Park residents, but then allocated to projects on which our elected officials have no voice. So our position has been, since the tolls are being paid by representatives of every jurisdiction, the allocation of those tolls should be administered by a body that has representation from every jurisdiction. I can see why someone would have a different opinion, but that's my opinion. I used the word parochial earlier, maybe that was the wrong one, but certainly jurisdictional / membership-driven perspectives on this. I have no problem taking a vote on this. What I've been telling people so far is I don't think that there's a clear consensus of the membership on this. But if we want to take a vote, we can. And I'll live with the consequences of that. You know.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, please.
And I'm sympathetic to the issue that PRTC members, you know, is it
sure.
and jurisdictions separate organization. And I, you know, and absolutely when choosing projects to be funded through the toll revenues, there needs to be a way for PRTC to be able to have a voice, or PRTC. That can be a procedural mechanism. We don't know yet that we'll have the toll revenues. We don't, you know, the project.
Sure.
But if that happens, you know, I would think there doesn't have to be legislation so much as a procedural mechanism for making sure that, you know, projects are evaluated and chosen in a way that, you know, that
sure.
all jurisdictions, you know, who are contributing towards those tolls, you know, have an opportunity to, you know, to participate.
Sure. And I'll share with you, that brings up the question of probably very few Stafford, Fredericksburg, and Spotsylvania residents ever will be paying tolls inside the Beltway on 66, and therefore we're now giving a vote to people. You know, it's complicated no matter what. I acknowledge that. I think I heard Mrs. Bullock make a motion saying that we would send a letter and a proposition to this.
I will be glad to make that motion that we express our opposition to this. Bill
726. Motion made by Mrs. Bulova, seconded by Mr. Fassett. Clerk, take the vote, please.
Mr. Chairman,
please.
Just a comment.
Yeah.
I spoke to this a little bit last time, and Marty, you said it well. I don't know how you'll necessarily vote,
but I'll probably work similarly to the way I did last month.
I understand.
And I recognize and appreciate the potential for money paid by citizens of Prince William, Manassas Park, to be used by the MVTC in a way that benefits those that would be paying the tolls from the jurisdictions that aren't members of the MVTC. Thank you.
All right. Any other discussion on this? Okay. I'll take a vote.
Chairman Nowit?
No.
Mayor Silverberg?
Aye.
Chairman Bulova?
Aye.
Chair Randall?
Aye.
Board Member Fassette?
Aye.
Mayor Parrish?
No.
Mayor Silverthorne?
Aye.
Councilmember Oliver?
Aye.
Councilmember Rochelle?
Yes.
Mr. Garzinski?
This is a weighted vote. I don't think
it is a weighted vote. Everything's a weighted vote.
Two thirds membership.
Do we
still vote?
Yes, you still vote. There are three different weights. There are three different weights we have to make.
You don't get the weight of the state.
No.
No. The motion fails for a lack of a two-thirds majority overall. With 7 voting aye and 4 voting nay, a two-thirds majority of 11 voting members would require 8 yes votes. It does pass by two-thirds of the jurisdictions and probably passes on two-thirds of the population because we haven't changed from projections to estimates yet. If we had it, like a lot bigger than that plan. It fails on overall membership.
So let me
explain for new members and for the audience. Under our bylaws, we have a very complex set of voting rules that force us to come to consensus. We like to brag about how we do everything by consensus. It's really not an option to not do things by consensus. Our rules, we have 17 overall members. We, in order to do any business at all, we have to meet 2 different levels of quorum based on those 17 members. We have 14 voting members, although only 11 are here tonight. So once we have achieved a quorum, which we by far have, any action requires that two-thirds of the member of the voting members present or participating. An abstention does not count as a no. Participate. An abstention would be an abstention. Two-thirds of the members of the voting of the members who vote. And two-thirds of the voting members who represent jurisdictions and members representing jurisdictions equaling at least two-thirds of the population of the region. All 3 supermajorities must be met for anything to pass. So we did meet the two-thirds majority based on the 9 jurisdictions, and we may have met the two-thirds majority based on population, but it would have been close. We probably did. But we did not meet two-thirds majority based on the total voting membership. And for the purposes, and just so people understand, the 3 non-voting members count in terms of achieving a quorum, but do not count in terms of achieving a majority because they don't vote. And it's interesting that there is a scenario, if Mrs. Bulova leaves the room, that it's possible for us to have a quorum, but for there to never be a passing vote. And we've had a few times where she can kill anything she wants to kill. Because we've had a few times where we've begun the meetings, we do in fact have a quorum, because the quorum is not driven by population. But we do sometimes have a quorum, but not enough of a quorum to actually pass a meeting. So, that said, where we are back to is, let me propose another solution. I suspect that, well, Prince William County has already communicated a position on this. Perhaps some other jurisdictions have as well, and I suspect
NDTC. We haven't yet, but we will.
You will. And I suspect that NDTC will as well. I have gotten very good over the last few years at saying, are you asking this of Supervisor Noe or NVTA Chairman Noe? Mm-hmm. And when speaking on behalf of the authority, We can fine-tune this if you want. I have no problem saying the authority was divided on this issue, although numerically, the majority opposed this, but concerns were raised.
Yeah, communicate that.
To Mr. Lemon.
We will be asked about this again.
Yes,
what about a letter of concern expressing that? A formal letter of concern.
If we could just make sure that it was clear that there was division, that all elements of what is required for passage of a motion were not
sure.
We're not there.
Let me propose another spin on this. Can I start with a phone call to Jim Lemony?
Yes.
because frankly, there's a possibility that we'll be told in the next few days, don't worry about this, the thing isn't being forwarded with me. What do we say? I'll talk to Jim Lemony and explain how the vote broke down, and he may say to me, well, we're plowing forward on this. And then staff can come back to us with a recommendation about how to communicate our concerns. Or alternatively, we may be told, your opinion is not going to matter because this thing is not going anywhere, which is sometimes the case. So let's start there. And if there's a clear need for communication, which there likely is, I think staff understands the concern, can draft something, and then we'll circulate it to the membership for comments and send it out. Is that working?
Okay.
I knew this would be the sticky one.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 927, this is also Delegate Lemonian. What this bill would do would require the authority to make certain information, and the information that's requested is the House Bill 599 scores, the cost of the project, total cost of the project, total cost that the authority is considering allocating to the project, and the ratings from any other scoring that you may do, and make that available publicly at least 30 days before you make a decision on an expenditure of funds. Essentially, that is what you do today. This merely would codify that and set a hard 30-day time frame to make that information available.
Can I make a suggestion on this? My first blush of this was, we already do this. We probably already exceed this. Why do we care? Except we learned a lesson last month with the bylaws that we put things out for public comment and public review at a meeting. We take a vote and we say, direct staff to go send things out to the world. Our meetings sometimes are less than 30 days apart. I would suggest that we ask the patron to shorten the time frame to, let's say, 20 days apart so that we don't have a problem with having to delay action an entire extra month because our meetings happen to be on a four-week schedule rather than a lunar calendar schedule.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you need a motion to that effect, but I think that's the right approach.
I suspect he'll be amenable. He never asked about this, but he just wants to, I'll talk about the other. I'll say, by the way, I think this is what's next. And I want to say 20 days because I don't think we ever have meetings 3 weeks apart, but if we do, it's one day less than that.
Yeah. Okay. House Bill 729, Delegate Lemonian. What this requires is the Virginia Department of Transportation to review all proposed local comprehensive plan amendments for issues related specifically to homeland security, and determine the impacts, and then to provide that information or submit that information to the locality and also to the authority.
Where is 729 at?
728, I'm sorry.
728. Thank you.
The current code does require this analysis, but it's silent as to who the analysis should be submitted to.
It always would say that it has to be sent to us. We don't necessarily have to then do anything specific with it.
All right, moving on. House Bill 901, this is Delegate Marshall's bill. What this bill would require that the authority spend 50% of your revenues that you do not distribute to the local government. So from the 70% you retain, you would have to use 50% of those dollars for rapid transit on I-66, expansion of VRE, or I-66 construction outside the Beltway.
Does our chair want to reach out to the patron of that bill?
He's not quick to return my calls. He is a constituent, to be fair. He's not my delegate. I'm going to say, I think, heck yeah, we'll reach out to every one of those. This is in controversy to almost every clause of HB 2313. There's nothing, this would completely obliviate our enabling legislation. And I just don't, I think we.
So therefore, we oppose.
We strongly oppose, right?
Strongly
with
underlying. Oh, I'm not sure if it's a committee. This could just wither on someone's desk. Yeah. It's actually interesting that we're not anywhere near this, but we could actually, it's theoretically possible that we could end up taking on a lot of debt someday, and that debt service could exceed 51% of our total revenues, and making it busy, because we're required under the law to pay debt service before we do anything else, which is a good policy. And Joanne's like wants me to say it's a good policy.
Okay. Thank you. Strongly opposed.
Strongly opposed.
All right. The next. Next, HB 949 is the same as House Bill 111. What this would do is would increase the membership on the authority by one member, and it would provide that that member be a representative of the towns that have that maintain their own roads, essentially. And it does, the description says non-legislative citizen member. What that means is non-General Assembly member, but the bill actually requires it to be an elected official of one of those towns. So it increases your membership and it makes the town member a voting member.
But it adds a second town member, but only that second member has a vote.
That's what I was going to ask. In English, this seat doesn't vote. And one of the reasons I was elected by the towns was to get this seat to have a vote. So this legislation is saying keep this seat as a non-voting member, and then the same towns have a second seat, but it's a voting member.
It does not affect the current seat. Yeah. So the practical, it would be that it would be two town members, one voting and one non-voting.
Still have not have a vote, but somebody else would then be put on who wouldn't
have. Am I missing something as to why we wouldn't just say, you want to give a vote to Jerry?
Right.
Do we want to have a vote? Take the member that we currently have and give him the vote, or do we want to stay quiet? It doesn't do us any good.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoy coming to the meetings, and I came here even when I wasn't sitting in this seat. But the towns, we have talked about this, and we talked about it 2 years ago, and Monica told me, put my head back in the sand for another year or so. So, but in motion.
I'll tell you that now, Jerry.
I'm not listening to you, Marty. But in most of the towns this year, we got together in our legislative agendas. We said change this seat to a voting member. So do we say anything as the MBTA? I would recommend that we say something, and we have the language already crafted in all our legislative agenda.
Yeah,
please.
Just out of curiosity, what was the rationale for having the town member be a non-voting member?
Well, that's before all the funding changed.
Okay.
When the funding changed, we were suddenly in competition.
That's not true.
Well, no, from where we're sitting, that's
okay.
Exactly.
Because let me give a little history. Hal will remember this.
Here we go.
Ms. Schneider isn't here. So this actually didn't come up before we had funding. It came up when we had funding in 2007. And prior to 2007, the representation of the towns was the PCAC. The way the towns represented was the Planning Coordinating Advisory Committee, which in 2007, upon the passage of HB 3202, became very relevant. I don't think we even formed that committee because we had the money. There was nothing to talk about. When we had money, we formed the committee. And right around that time, legislation was filed to add a voting member representing towns. The authority opposed that on the basis that it would create a few issues. One was, this was back in 2007, one of the issues was that, and I should say, it came up as a legislative issue in late 2007 once we were working on spending the money and became an actual bill in the 2008 session. We opposed on the grounds that it seemed to fly in the face of one man, one vote, in that presuming it would be the current seat, the town of Dumfries has been given a vote purportedly on behalf of the other four towns, but as a practical matter, can ignore the concerns of those other four towns, create a second issue in that the town that holds that seat could be perceived as being a second vote on behalf of the county in which that town is divided, creating, right now Prince William would have a little extra voting strength. It also was a concern that I think, like, although Leesburg liked the idea, I'm throwing Leesburg under the bus here, I believe Leesburg had the position that we should definitely have a vote and it should always belong to Leesburg because we're much bigger than all the other towns. I think at the time maybe all the others combined. Maybe, I don't know if that's true anymore. And so the authority took a position against it, saying it just screws up the voting structure too much. So we're just against it. So myself and Mr. Zimmerman went down and testified against it. About 3 days before the Supreme Court overturned the bill that provided our funding, at which point no one really cared anymore, but Delegate Russ, speaking on behalf of town of Turnin, couldn't back down because we already passed crossover, so they amended the bill on the Senate side just to take away the vote, and we all went, okay, I'm not sure what happened here. That's where it landed. So that sort of, so it actually does go back to when we had money, but then the money went away. So in the past, we have actually opposed, whether it be a second seat or the single seat, adding the town vote because of a perception that it doesn't fit with the one-man, one-vote structure, which, going back to our previous vote, because we have weighted votes, it would throw that off. Maybe we feel differently now, but that's sort of the history on it. And it was a very weird day. We got to say, like, this changed nothing as a practical matter. We have one extra person gets 10 votes. So.
Does this require opening up the original legislation?
Yes, this is opening up. Actually, it's not the legislation. It's not 2313. It opens up.
570.
It opens up 576.
Authorizing
from back in 2002, which creates the authority. And that was, I think, the other issue is it's a foot in the door. I'm not real worried that the foot will go any further through the door. I don't think that we'd get a second change to our legislation. And I don't know, and this would be a question for bond counsel, who I don't believe is here. Our current bond, maybe Joanne can answer this. Our bond validation, or maybe the Council of Councils, was predicated largely on we followed all the rules to the letter. In the 2014 session, we put a lot of energy into opposing legislation that changed the four corners of our rules because we were afraid it would muddy up the bond validation. I don't know if that concern is still relevant.
The final order in the validation, part of that did validate the code section that you're talking about right now. So because of the concerns that were expressed in the issue to ensure that the one person, one vote. So yeah, that was part of the final order. So those concerns would still be there if they would change.
And Mr. Chairman, and for the MBTA folks, what we've done over the past 3 years is the person that's been sitting in the room, really started with Bob. He communicates with the towns what we talk about here and where we sit with funding. So I initially had the same concerns. It was like, what's the history? Where are we at? What are we doing? Yeah, I agree. We represent, come up here. But now what happens is we're talking with, I was the member when we did House Bill 2313. We were doing emails almost biweekly to the town saying, let's talk about the language. And Leesburg came up and said, we want this, we want this. So we have, I understand the concerns of what they had in the past. Now this seat truly goes back to the towns and says, how do you want me to vote? What do you want me to do? And this year was truly, and I've got to thank Chairman Noe and Monica, this year we truly got to select. It used to be a rotational basis of who sat up here. This year we actually all talked via email, picked up the phone, called each other and said, all right, we're doing away with this. This is a good thing. One person can sit up there multiple years if they're representing. If they're not, then we rotate through. And we select our representative by vote. So some of the concerns of the past are being dealt with, and there is communication. So, yes, there's a lot of – I don't think it would be – and Marty can tell you, I don't vote Marty's way, but we do talk, and it would be, okay, this is what's coming up on the agenda. How do you want me to vote or that way? I don't think you'd see a jurisdiction or a town voting just for the town's sake. So that's been addressed. That's why I say again, I would ask that rather than put a second seat up here, one voting, one non-voting, make this member a voting member. And if you want to codify anything, make the town come back and talk about how we're communicating, and that we have to have it.
I think that
first of all, I don't think we should support the bill. I think adding another member is kind of weird. I would be concerned about making a change, I guess, regarding the towns and the towns' vote. It just seems to open up some more complications than we need. Apparently, things have been working pretty well as far as, you know, the towns communicating with each other and then coming to the table, to MBTA meetings. So I'm not, first of all, I think we should oppose the bill as written. I'm not sure that it's a good idea to try to change the bill to give the existing town member a vote. I don't feel so strongly about it that if it happened, I would be upset, but it just seems that it would add complications that we don't have right now. And I guess the issue that, right now we don't have this situation, but I could imagine if, say, the town of Vienna or Herndon, had a vote at MBTA, and Fairfax County has a vote at MBTA, wouldn't there be a perception that, gosh, Fairfax County's got more of a vote than it should have because, now our town is representing, us or representing the town, and towns are part of the county.
You already got the city of Fairfax.
Right.
Only when she needs me. Only when she
needs me. So anyway,
it seems, it seems the simple thing is that we've got a bill that's in front of us, House Bill 949, that we ought to oppose.
Right. Cut to the chase.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with that. I will throw in one caveat. It's possible that we'll get a call saying, oh, some variation of this bill is going through, whether you guys like it or not, at which point I would have a fallback position of, okay, but if you're going to do that, do it the way the town's asked for it, not by having a town imbalance problem.
If it's going to happen anyway.
If it's going to, if committee chairs have decided, oh, we think this is a great idea, or VML, or whoever, the towns themselves have lobbied well, that's a possibility.
Is that an alternative? Is there one motion or two? I mean, there are two different things, right?
Why don't we not complicate things?
Okay. We're opposed to
two different things. We're not in favor, and let's see what happens. So, I guess.
If it comes back, we can amend on the fly.
Or if it's a different iteration, then we can talk about that.
Thank you.
Okay. Senate Bill 112. Essentially, specifically allows the authority to fund sidewalk projects.
On their own or as part of the bigger project?
On their own. This is actually authority that you already have.
Yeah.
The restriction you have right now is that projects need to be part of the transaction of the long-range plan. If sidewalk projects are part of your long-range plan, they can be funded. You don't need any additional authorization to fund sidewalk projects, but any project the authority funds has to be part of the transaction.
Why don't we just communicate that with Senator Peterson, let him know we can do that already.
So can I just make sure I understand what you just said, because I'm not sure that I do. Because when I first read this, I thought, well, sidewalks are not regional. So you're saying it would be part of a, we can fund sidewalks if it's part of a transportation regional issue that's going on, plan that's going on.
It's part of a regional plan, for example. That's a good
suggestion.
If it's a connection to a metro station,
maybe
it could be a regional project.
And if you said that you want, and if what you said is you want sidewalks along Chainbridge Road, the jurisdiction would have to persuade the authority through our analysis that pedestrian facility along an existing, because I think the goal of the patron here is to allow jurisdictions that mostly want new sidewalks more than they want roads or transit facilities to request them. the other reality is the odds that a pedestrian-only facility that doesn't tie into a metro station, for example, would score well for overall congestion relief relative to cost is pretty low.
Yeah.
Although I could suppose if someone wanted to argue that we needed to add extra lanes of pedestrian facilities on the Key Bridge, the sidewalks on the Key Bridge would leave a lot of congestion on their own. So maybe it's out there.
We can do it. Essentially increasing the membership on the Commonwealth Transportation Board by adding two members, one of which would represent the Hampton Roads Transportation Accountability Commission, the other would represent MBTA.
So that would be, this is kind of analogous to what we talked about the towns. This would be someone in addition to Mr. Garzynski, who is under legislation a member of the MBTA and this body.
That's what I was thinking.
So,
I can't vote, but I don't know. That's exactly what I was thinking. I want to see how this vote goes.
So, it seems, last year, the General Assembly revisited the structure of the CTB last year, and I'm going to, frankly, made themselves more powerful, not the executive branch on that one. So I don't know if this one gets a whole lot of legs, but I think it's a great idea. I think it's fantastic. Let's go get ourselves another vote. I would add the caveat that it only works. It's only a representative of the NBTA if it's someone the NBTA chooses. Giving the governor the authority to appoint someone to represent the NBTA gives the governor simply the authority to appoint two Northern Virginia representatives, neither one of whom has to represent us. So that would be my only caveat.
Can I ask a question? Yeah. The CTV right now, are there organizations represented, or is it regions?
It's the nine districts,
yeah,
and then it's urban and it's rural at-large members, but no organizations.
Yeah, I mean, and the only thing it raises for me, because, you know, two biggest parts of the state, all the rest, is there a logic to it, is when you start then not just adding to sort of a construct that's already there, but you start pulling out organizations.
Changing their structure.
It's more of a change than just adding to. I mean, so it seems a little odd to me, honestly, in that regard. I'd almost rather see an additional seat from Northern Virginia, an additional seat from Hampton Roads, and then...
See, the way that's looked at, Jay, is that beside the district representatives, the at-larges are coming from, like, Jim Dyke from Northern Virginia,
right,
and the same we have.
So they're used in that way,
yeah.
Sure.
And the problem would be it would create a schism, again, not probably between legislatures more than CTB, of the haves versus the haves, the rest of the state versus, you know, the two bellwethers economically, because they'd see more power. Again, comments, that means rural legislatures get up in arms.
So you see some trouble. Where
I think there's a lot of trouble.
It's not worth that.
So we're not in favor.
So we oppose.
We oppose it?
We oppose.
Okay.
I support your vote, your opposition.
We're consistent.
That's all I'm asking for.
That's fine. I don't think it's going to happen, whatever next one items are in our agenda. Are they all in support of our agenda?
No.
Okay. Let's talk about that one.
All right. The first one is House Bill 716. What this does is it requires that the CTB essentially weigh congestion mitigation twice all other factors for evaluation of evaluated projects here in Northern Virginia. So right now the CTB has weighted congestion, I think, 45%. So it would have to be twice what the other factors are weighted.
It has to be at least 66%.
Right. In terms of the allocation of HB2 money.
Frankly, this is good for us. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. This would benefit Northern Virginia, because the higher you score congestion relief, the more funding we get.
Well, but it only requires that for Northern Virginia. So it doesn't require that that would still be applied.
Oh, I mean, but
it doesn't apply to.
But again, it's still presumably. You reduce economic development or accessibility, and you increase congestion relief. Our projects are likely to score higher.
It's just within the region.
No, within the region. No, but that means but our region already has its own evaluation that's different than the rest of the state.
Yeah. Ourselves and Hampton Roads.
Same as Hampton Roads. So it actually advantages us over Hampton Roads. I mean, again, it doesn't go anywhere.
You guys dealt with this issue this last year, right? And you had what are the percentages and all the rest, and the congestion mitigation or whatever congestion reduction was increased to 45, and some things like accessibility or economic development. Or
there was pluses and minuses when did the equation.
So, and the point is, I think the key one is it's not statewide. So I don't understand. It doesn't help us. Parochially as a region, because this is only being applied to our region. So,
I think it does help. I mean, we don't have to support it. I think no position is a pretty reasonable position on this. But our projects get a score. Other regions get a score that's calculated in a different form. Anything that's likely to make our scores within our region higher without changing the scores of the rest of the region would seem to direct more money to our region relative to those regions where the playing field is going to remain level. I think that's the attempt here. I will say the downside is that then there will suddenly be a lot of pressure on us to make the MBTA's evaluation have...
Which we've already had.
Congestion relief. We've already raised it once in response to the General Assembly action.
Right.
There'll be pressure on us to raise it to 66% at that
right.
point. That's where the rub is. We don't have to do it. There'll be pressure. Yeah.
I would either not say a word or oppose it.
I agree. And the other factors, we gave a lot of thought to this. The other factors have to do with safety, economic development. Accessibility. So we gave a lot of thought to how congestion should be weighted, and we increased the weight for congestion. So I think to try to push it even more than that, I think is just not a good idea.
I think if we, as we visit this on a periodic basis, there may be incremental changes to that number, but this is drastic.
Yeah.
And I think I kind of agree with Jay, we leave it alone.
Right.
Just the position?
Yeah.
The position?
Or opposition?
If it's a choice, I'll take no position. But if you want to
say
it again, if we have a choice, I would say no position.
Just not to.
Just
what if it passes? What if they think we're okay with it?
Well, that's the only.
Yeah.
I mean, that I guess is the that's the operative question: is not having a position. Is that seen as acquiescence? I don't know.
Right. I think
Mr. Chairman, one thing that you might want to do is see if it makes it out of the House. And if it makes it out of the House, you would still have an opportunity to take a position on it before it can get through the
Senate.
Yeah.
There is no one from South of the Chapel wants to vote.
No, exactly. It's not going to
get passed. That's if you're right that something applying just to us anybody really cares about or thinks it has any application to them, which I bet they wouldn't.
No, I didn't care about that.
Let's see where it goes. Come back to us.
Okay. The next bill, 717, this essentially requires that VDOT evaluate certain projects in Northern Virginia. And those projects from the legislation are the American Legion Bridge, two Potomac River crossings, the Bi-County Parkway, widening of I-66 west of the Beltway, and 100% expansion of I-66 inside the Beltway, and to complete that analysis by December 31st. What it does not say is what evaluation means.
It just says that VDOT is directed to evaluate those projects.
So, I mean, it would seem to imply that it means run them through the analysis units for HB5 and not, but it's not explicit on that. What I don't like about it is it sucks up a lot of capacity that we can use to, you know, VDOT has told us they can only do so many 599 projects at a time, and when you add legislatively projects to VDOT's plate, you reduce the amount that we can get evaluated, I think.
Just point of clarification, Mr. Chairman, we need the authority. We have to do 599 as part of our project selection process. State, I don't know if they can do an independent.
They just did it.
599.
They just did it. Mm-hmm. They just did it on 66 out of the
development. Correct.
So, just wanted to make that point.
I mean, they can do it. What the value of the outcome is remains to be seen. But.
And we're allowed CTB to put in one or two projects
also
per year, but the administration does put in, as you said. And I'm sure the Legion Bridge is going to be one of them for next year.
Mm-hmm. And we
what you read
that.
Is much longer than what's here, right?
Yeah. Right, yes. I went into the bill, and the bill lists those specific projects.
It's just a bad idea. I mean, it's just bad legislation. I mean, it's just not the way you do these things. We have all these. So, I mean, is there a? It is. It's revisiting. It's denying decisions already made. It's undermining existing compromises. It's just you can't have one legislator do that and us be silent on it. I don't care how you feel.
No.
I don't care how you feel on a particular project. It just.
Right.
Seems like something we as a body should oppose. Again, whether you agree with one of them or two or pieces, that's not the way you work as a region.
I agree. I like many of the facilities on that. I think some of the facilities on the list are good facilities. I just don't want these facilities that no one is talking about funding to absorb capacity, management capacity of VDOT that could be used to evaluate projects that we actually are thinking of funding. So that's my problem.
So,
it creates competition.
I think both of those concerns could be relayed to them, and I think probably should. Couldn't you oppose this then?
Yeah, I think we oppose it.
Oh,
and we
and
communicate.
Relay.
Good,
and relay.
Good. I
and
like
relay.
That.
Again, this is another one that may not get. This is another one that may not get.
Okay.
So it may not be relevant what our position is.
Okay.
I mean, if it's a statewide prioritization determined by the administration in concert with the CTB, it will be studied.
Correct.
Yeah. And there's a process for that.
Sure.
And by the way, there's two processes for that, actually.
Yeah.
There's HB5 and HB2 that both facilitate that. So.
Okay, HB 719 is similar to HB 727, which would impose some requirements on the authority for advertising projects before action. But what it does is it imposes those same requirements on the CTB. So it's a very similar requirements, only it's on the CTB versus the authority.
I think we back the CTB. Whatever the CTB is.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what it might hamstring you. I don't know.
I think the danger here is
not knowing.
Not knowing, but also, you know, Governor Paul has made it a priority to try to depoliticize the CTB and the process of transportation funding. To me, this looks like the fingers back in trying to do that. That's why I don't like the legislation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, opposed.
Okay. The last two bills in this section are bills that were introduced in Hampton Roads, but they do have an impact here in Northern Virginia. When the state raised the gas tax as part of HB 2313, which is now a percentage of the sale price of a gallon of gasoline. They put a floor in for the state gas tax, so they said that even if the price of gas falls, there's a floor and it would still generate the same minimum level of revenue for the state. They did not put that floor in for the regional gas tax for either NBTC, PRTC, or the gas tax that was imposed as part of HB 2313 for Hampton Roads. This is a position that is part of, I believe, the MTC legislative program, and it is a position that's part of the HR.
This is so refreshing.
So this would impose the floor for the revenues that come to MBTC and PRT.
This is the thing I just had my letter to the editor published about.
Right.
We like
right.
We want to support you, Marty.
Thank you.
And Hampton Roads is very much with us on it. I mean, they want us to be their partner.
And I think it speaks volumes that they actually kind of took the lead on
they
this.
Did.
We've struggled in Prince William to find a champion. A lot of people say, well, I'll throw a bill in, but I don't know if I want to speak to it. Hampton Roads has really stepped up because it probably affects
them much more.
It affects them, yeah. It affects them more. But they've got some. Actually, pretty far right, Frank. Frank Wagner is not a squishy,
right.
You know, fund everything.
Guy. Just attach your op-ed and send on.
Yes.
So support for both.
Yes.
All right. The next section here all relate to I-66. There is House Bill 224. What that does is it requires the General Assembly approve the imposition of tolls on any component of the interstate system.
Can I answer this before we start getting into that? We get about, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. We have 12 bills here, all of which serve in different ways to tinker with the General Assembly, tinker or obliterate the General Assembly or the Commonwealth Transportation Board to, very bluntly, some of them may be written more vaguely. They're all about blowing up one or the other or both of the 66 projects. I mean, to me, you can quibble that some of them are more tinkery than others, but they're all about tinkering with the projects. Do we want to, I mean, it seems to me that we either need, well, maybe...
I'm anti-tinker.
I'm anti-tinker. The project needs to go forward, or my view is it needs to go forward or not go forward based on the procedures that are already in place. We've done this authority has done enough work on it already to not justify blowing the whole thing up. And what this all boils down to is whose campaign sign said $17 tolls on them, which some great people had that on their campaign signs. To be clear, I'm reticent for us to quibble over which tinkering you want to support or not support.
It's not for us to be involved. It's not for us to be involved. Project's not come to us for funding in any official way. So why would we?
I agree. I mean, I'm assuming they all are tinkering like that.
I mean, are we wrong about that? They're all tinkering with the process.
Different, either requiring the General Assembly to approve, outright prohibiting tolling. Several of them deal with when HOV2 converts to HOV3, but they're all in that same vein.
There is one
that's different, and I should point that out. House Bill 1067, Delegate Jones's bill, what that bill does is it actually authorizes the Commonwealth to issue up to $1.5 billion worth of bonds to move the project forward. So that bill is actually different than all the other ones in terms of trying to restrict the project moving forward.
And that becomes germane when it decides to go forward.
Yeah. I just something just realized. We have been told by our Council of Councils so many times not to do anything that appears to prejudice a decision on the 2866 interchange project. Supporting or opposing any of these could give someone the opportunity to say that we have prejudiced the 66 and 28 interchange project, which we have said in this room we are going to evaluate on its merits for congestion relief relative to cost and other factors, full stop. So I think we just need to be silent on this because it opens the door to us stepping in something that messes with our own program. Maybe I'm wrong. But.
And you're suggesting that relates to all of these?
I think so.
Okay.
Except maybe the one with the bonds, but I don't think
but
we...
The bonds, we can't...
We don't... We,
why don't you handle all
we,
the
we
bonds
can't.
First? Get, okay. them out of, get them out of the way.
We have to see the finance
so
plan.
We agree with no position on the things that deal with the tinkering. Anyone object to that? Okay. The bonds. Tell me about bonds.
What this is intended to do is authorize the Commonwealth to issue the bonds, and the idea there that is intended to keep the private proposers that are interested in proposing on doing the project and financing the project, kind of keep them honest in the process, that the state could have another option if their proposals aren't financially feasible or financially attractive to the Commonwealth. So the intention of the administration is to provide another alternative if they don't get decent proposals from the
Commonwealth. Because the public-private partnership and public or the public funding is never has not been taken off the table. Be fully public.
So is this necessary to keep alive the multi-channel option?
I think
that is what the administration has intended to do with this.
So I
get the conversation, but do we need to take a stand?
I don't know. Again, I think it's sticking our nose where no one's asking for it to stop.
But that's what's behind it, Al.
Generally, we're supportive of it.
Is it fair to say we have not taken a position of any type in support of the projects?
Public, private.
We just have said, if you build it, we will consider building one of the interchanges that happens to be associated with it, and we will consider building that interchange even if you don't build it. Is what we've said. But we haven't said we want you to build it or not build it. We've said, we're going to look at this interchange, whether you build it or not. It's all that we've said.
Or we want to be public or P3.
Right.
We
haven't taken a position.
Stick with that.
To really be consistent.
I think the minute we express an opinion is the minute they come looking for more money. Yeah. It's a great idea. We love your idea. We agree with you.
Aubrey, do you hear that?
Just as I'm looking at it, I'm just... And how this is communicated, I think it makes a difference. Because the way this package, there's so many bills here, and you've tried to put them in categories, you know, MBTA related or referenced, and then the items in our program. Those are the most important that we have a position opposing or supporting, which it looks like for 4 out of 5 we do, which we may have one in a month. These, you know, if no position could be interpreted the wrong way. So I think it's important in any framing of this that we say on the I-66 outside the Beltway, all of these as they're framed, we didn't take them up. Or something that we...
Well,
do you know what I'm...
Let me give a little context on what we've done in the past.
Yeah.
So what we've done in the past is we don't... I mean, unless there's a serious issue, we don't proactively communicate bill-by-bill positions unprompted.
Okay.
We have our legislative position.
Good.
We have... Some of our jurisdictional legislative staff will often go to a committee and communicate concerns or communicate support.
Yeah.
Most often when this discussion, there's less more bill. I mean, this discussion has never taken this long, but this has never been more than a one-page document
right.
before, this presentation. That's why we have to go through it. So glad we don't have Penny Gross standing at the door saying 7:30. Generally, where this discussion becomes relevant is when Monica or I get a call at 2:00 on a Wednesday afternoon saying House Subcommittee 1 is meeting at 7:00 tomorrow morning, and we need to know what you think about this. And we pull out the notes and we go, oh, well, we support it or we oppose it, or we had a lengthy discussion and we didn't take a vote, but these were the concerns that were expressed. That's usually where this becomes relevant, not as part of a proactive legislative effort.
Well, okay, that's helpful because I didn't know
what we're doing.
But there was one we talked specifically about writing a letter of opposition, and then there were a handful that were...
Staff will do whatever the authority directs,
yeah.
But you did say earlier that you did want to send a letter, and what we have done for you in certain instances in the past is just put that the authority took these positions on certain bills, oppose, you know, HB 123, oppose HB 222, support, and just kind of left it at that and communicated that to the delegation. But we'll do whatever the authority wants to be done in this case. Somebody did specifically mention writing a letter to...
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking that on that back on the first day, it should be 723. We specifically said opposed with the letter, and then there were three others that we said opposed. I think we might have voted on the Marshall one, and the Keem and Peterson, right?
You said we opposed them.
Yes. Yeah. I don't want to.
You didn't necessarily say we need a letter on them.
Right. Right. So that was one. We said a letter, and the others we actually.
Is there concern that if we say nothing, that they will assume that we're supporting it? Because that would, because my thought would be this: if we're actually staying on some things, we support this, and other things we oppose this, and one or two things we support it or oppose it so much that we write a letter, then there'd be no logical reason for them to take the jump that if we say nothing,
that's
we support it.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I can't see, think why. I mean, that's a logical reason.
Right. So you're not giving them a whole list saying no position was taken, right? You're
right.
Just sending them the four, six, or
exactly.
Seven.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of chuckling because I mean, my intuitive reaction is we may be giving the general, some of my best friends in the world are in the General Assembly. We may be giving the General Assembly way too much credit about how much credit they give our opinion. Okay. What I think is more true is. They, on most of this stuff, unless we are in the title of it, they don't think about what we think until we show up and say something about it.
Right.
So I don't think it implies, I mean, I guess if there's a legislator who wants to support a piece of legislation and is trying to justify it in his or her own heart, they may go, you know, I never heard from the NPTA, I guess they support it. And someone could conversely go, well, so we never heard from the NPTA, they're probably hated as much as I do.
Right.
But I don't think there's anyone out there making a decision based on our silence. I mean, that's just not how they operate. I mean,
so all these tinkering ones, you just are silent.
Just they're not going to ask.
But the ones right above it, four of the five.
That we're opposed to.
Because
they directly affect our ability to do our business. And a few we support, because they directly affect our ability to do our business.
Although, if Marty gets a call at 3:00 on a Wednesday, Friday afternoon, about what is our position on, he can indicate that we talked about it. We had some concerns.
If I got a call on one of these 66, if I got a call on one of these 66 bills, what I would say is we didn't take a position on that because we didn't think it was our place to suggest that we tinker with existing processes.
Right.
And they would say, well, that would imply that you're against it. And I would say, what I'm against is tinkering. I'm not against your bills.
Right.
You know,
there you go.
Good news is we all trust
people. And let me say to be clear, sometimes, and Monica and I have had this where I'm not sure where the group is on this. We'll send out a blast email saying we need it, you know, to anyone who has their BlackBerry with them. I said their BlackBerry. Anyone who still has their telephonic device with them, please let us know in the next 2 hours if you have a strong feeling to be controversial to what we're about to say. We'll do that one. Yes,
can I just make one point about the bonding authority?
Yeah.
That is meant to keep the P3 honest and the price down,
right.
Which in the end may impact the board's consideration when asked to participate. If you keep the price down, it means less asked. It's just a something that's happening.
So you're saying maybe we should express
support
for that.
In the interest of keeping our
costs
down.
Why don't we do that?
Except we haven't supported the project, though. That's the only thing that bothers me.
Yeah, we haven't supported the project. That's right.
Although
we have gotten an ask on the project.
We did have discussion about hopefully there will be other sources of funding.
No, Helen's right. Helen is exactly right when you said that.
Yeah, there will be other sources
of leverage,
funding
so.
That they'll be looking toward. It's not just us, and so therefore we should be supportive. But they're looking at
other.
Let's fix
your plan funds, unless everything is
right.
Keep the price down.
Okay. That's actually
pretty logical to me. So let's do that.
Do we have a problem with that?
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the next group is a lot easier. HB 720, this essentially requires that VDOT and DRPT hold a public hearing regarding each project in excess of $10 million in planning District 8 at the conclusion of preliminary design, but before the detailed design begins, and that they should give 14 days notice. I'm not sure exactly what this is indicated to, but I think there's a good chance that it's directed at I-66 inside the building. And
to try and address that project. The next project relates to the signage of commuter parking ride lots that indicate that they could only be used by commuters using mass transit or carpool riders. This deals with a facility in Reston in particular.
Is it true that they are only available to people who are in carpools?
That is not the currently there is no designation on the park and ride lots. And what this would prevent is somebody to use it for other purposes, but it would also prevent people from using the lot on a Saturday to...
I don't know if I care much about this one, but I think that right now, if I wanted to, I could pull into the commuter lot that's a half a mile from my private sector business, park there, and walk to work. Not sure why I'd do it, but I could. This sign would say I can't do it, but under the current rules, the sign would be lying.
Right.
Okay. Mr.
Chairman, is that even
enforceable
if you get this?
Yeah, all you gotta do is say, no, I take a carpool to the store.
Theoretically, you could say you were commuting to your office. And
yeah. Or if you get on a bicycle.
Let's move on. And
also, this doesn't say I-66 or what?
No. This is actually, we've had discussions with the patron on this. This is aimed at a problem at the Wheelie Reston North Park and Ride Lot near the Wheelie Reston East Metro Station, where there are some construction workers that are using Park and Ride Lot. They technically are probably commuting to work too, but maybe not.
Commuting very short distance.
Not the type of commuting.
And what you're going to eventually get is you're going to have some beautiful high-rise apartments next door to a metro station with some parking, and someone's going to have a big party in their apartment, and they're going to want to park in the commuter lot for this party that happens at 4:30 in the afternoon.
But for instance, the VRE lot in Burke Center has a farmer's market that.
This only governs VDOT lots, so
it
would not
lots.
Affect the VRE lots.
Yeah.
Are we
going to
go through all this?
Yeah, is there anything else here?
We're not going to have positions on it. Why don't we leave it to us to study them ourselves?
There is a section of bills on I-66 inside the Beltway. As with the outside the Beltway, I think all of these bills are intended to restrict the ability to move forward with those. Other than that, there are some study bills on that page. There's also an interesting bill that requires that half of the performance evaluation of VDOT and DRPT in planning District 8 is based on the extent that congestion is reduced. So the rest of those are more for your information. There are a series of bills on HR TAC, and what they're trying to do is something that you actually discussed earlier tonight, which is it relates to the designation of the member.
Hampton Roads Transportation and
which you don't need to take any action.
Let me make an observation, we from time to time get calls from folks at Hampton Roads saying, there's a bill that only affects us. Will you support us on it? The position that Monica and I have traditionally taken when that comes up is, we support legislation that makes them more like us. And would seem to have no impact on us and don't express an opinion on things that don't affect their similarity to us. They have a different structure than we do. One of the big issues is they were not allowed to have alternates at their meetings, and they asked us to... It was odd. I was actually the only person who testified. No one from Hampton Roads testified in favor of them being allowed to have alternates at meetings, but I prevailed on their behalf. So, I mean, if it's about giving them the same rules that we have, we usually say yes, and if it's not about that, we just say, I can't help you.
Support the friends of our friends and the enemies of our friends.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
All right. So, Mr. Chairman, that really is the extent of what has been introduced so far. There will be additional bills that will be filed, and I'm sure some of them may be of interest to the authority, so we'll make sure that's communicated.
I will say to our new members who haven't been this board, this is the longest this conversation has ever taken by a lot. I won't promise you the meetings aren't sometimes this long, but I'll promise they're always at least this interesting. Mr. Boyce is not here for TAC report. I think they've met recently anyway.
They did meet, but the report is in the packet.
Okay. Mr. Foreman, you got anything from PCAC for us that you need to know about?
Yes, just real quick. We don't meet, this is for the new members. We don't meet every month.
The PCAC.
The PCAC.
Oh,
okay. That's all we need. And I have a vote on the PCAC. And that's all said in good sense. The PCAC does not meet every month. We really did leaps and bounds the first several months, scoping what the bylaws were, interpreting what they were, and going. And I got to thank everybody for getting everybody there. But here's what's happened the last 6 months. We've tried to get everybody there, and we haven't gotten a quorum. So what you can take back to your representatives, what we wanted to do in December was just meet in December so that we could come in the January meeting and report to you what we've done and where we're going. And we didn't get a quorum. It was a tough year. So some of this stuff that I'm saying to you, we all know last year was an election year. So folks were tired and they worked hard. So what I would say to you is it's January. We're probably going to go out with an email saying, let's try to meet. I would like to get everybody's push that we at least meet in February. If we could do that, that's still a month off. I'll do an email. Monica will craft it. We'll get together. But if you could get everybody to say, let's show up in February so that we can talk about what we're trying to accomplish and align our goals, that would be perfect. If you could take that back to the board. Yes, sir.
And your quorum requirement is now much lower.
It's lower.
Effective tonight. So even if we fail in getting more people to come, it's a good chance of a quorum.
Yes, sir. And that's why I was happy for that. But if you could just talk to your folks about, we're probably not going to meet in January. We're going to push for a February, and it's going to be a short meeting, but we need everybody there.
Excellent.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Executive Director report.
Mr. Chairman, it's in the packet.
Excellent. Thank you. One item for Chairman's report. Is that question for Chairman's report? This is a question and then a thought. Do we need to have a February meeting? Is there anything that is urgent in February?
There are no action items on the February meeting draft agenda as of now, but I do anticipate there will be a need for a legislative update. Okay.
So here's the catch. Our February meeting is scheduled for the same day as the VACO legislative day in Richmond.
What day is that?
The 11th of February,
yes.
Which those of us from counties are usually down in Richmond at least during the day, and often in the evening we go to dinner with our colleagues in our legislative delegations, which would create a big quorum problem here. We don't have to make it. What I'd like to say is let's see if anything happens in the next few days, and here's how I would suggest we go about doing this. I do not want to have a meeting if there's no action items. Right? That's nuts. There's no point in having a meeting to vote on nothing. Let's say that unless an action item becomes really relevant in the next week or so, let's assume that the February meeting will be canceled. However, a legislative update will be sent probably even before that date, but certainly by that date. And if there are issues that require some discussion, we can facilitate that,
right.
Look for solicit feedback electronically.
Right. Right.
If something real, if we do end up canceling it and then something really urgent comes up, we can call a short meeting at 6:30 the night before the NVRC meeting for February only on the 11th. But that is pretty unlikely. Does that work? Yeah. Okay. Is there any other business to come before the authority this evening? Hearing none, we are adjourned. Thank you.